It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Our hearts and our prayers and our thoughts going out to the people of Ukraine. We'll talk about how war has changed thanks to technology and how cyber war may be the next step. We'll have some fun with a hot new game that's way too hard for me, Elden Ring. Georgia Dow will explain how to play better. We've got Lisa Schmeiser in the house. Owen J.J. Stone, O-Doctor's also here. We'll talk about the Webb Telescope, the Steam Deck, and then some recommendations for your next game. Hey, a quick reminder before we get into the show. Last chance to take the annual TWiT survey. We only do this once a year. We want to get to know you better. But the survey runs out the 28th, which is Monday. So if you haven't taken it yet and it's still in time, it's still not Monday, or just before the end of the day Monday, go to twit.tv/survey22. And thanks in advance. Now, on with the show.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 864, recorded Sunday, February 27th, 2022. Can't tell the schist from the feldspar. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Streak. Whether you're tracking sales, fundraising, hiring, or in support, Streak is a CRM that will help you stay on top of all your processes directly inside Gmail. Get 20% off your first year of their pro plan, their most popular option, by going to streak.com/twit. And by Imperfect Foods. Combating climate change feels big and overwhelming, but there's an easy and delicious way to make an impact. Imperfect Foods. Right now, Imperfect Foods is offering our listeners 20% off your first four orders when you go to imperfectfoods.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like leaving your keys in your car while you run into the gas station for a snack. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/twit and get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. And by Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love or something new to discover. New members can try Audible for 30 days free. Download the Audible app and get started with a free trial at audible.com/twit or text TWIT to 500-500. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. We're going to have a fun time because Lisa Schmeiser is here with a brand new job, editor-in-chief at No Jitter. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
I got to warn you, I can read your whiteboard. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. It's all planned activities for the Girl Scout troop.
Oh, it's not like the secrets of world domination or anything like that.
Unless that's on my other wall.
Maybe your Girl Scout troop's planning that.
I would not put it past them.
Yeah, service project. Would you rather? Yeah, who wants to go camping? I get it. Mm-hmm. It's Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
You told me that Girl Scout cookies are experiencing a supply chain shortage.
That's right. It is Girl Scout cookie season. If you are lucky enough to know a Girl Scout, ask her if she's selling through Digital Cookie and see if you can get your packages shipped to you. Because in some parts of the country, there's been a bit of a supply chain breakdown and we're having a hard time getting cookies from the bakers into our hot little hands to sell to you.
Wow. I mean, I've heard of supply chain shortages hitting cars, hitting computers, hitting graphics cards. Cookies?
I think some of it's labor, too.
That's a problem. That's a problem, but sure. Yeah,
it was something we were not really expecting this year, so it was a big surprise.
You know, you got to raise the price on the Girl Scout cookies so they could pay the bakers more.
They actually did.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
All boxes, in Northern for the Girl Scouts of Northern California, all of the boxes are now $6 a piece. Yeah. So the price is
if it goes in the pockets of the oligarchs who run the baking companies, then I'm not happy. If it goes into the pockets of the people at the ovens, I'm down for that. That's people have to earn a minimum wage. That's, people say, oh, nobody wants to work. Nobody wants to work for your crappy wages. Nobody wants to work. pay them what they're worth and
pay up, deadbeat.
Yeah, which is why, by the way, there's only about 15 people left working here. No. Hey, so also,
you guys have also been remote for
yeah. Remote. That's the real problem. It feels like a ghost town. And even though the mask mandates have been lifted, we are not rushing people back into the studio. Slowly, Jason's been doing his show from here and slowly working our way back in. Also with us, I love seeing her. It's Georgia Dow, everybody's favorite psychotherapist, YouTube psychotherapist. Hi, Georgia.
Hello. Nice to be here.
You're not going to wear the angel wings for the show?
You want me to wear the... They're not fully... They're short still. They're not going to be the same.
You got more.
They're just tiny.
Where do you get the feathers?
I don't know if I even could. I bought them from Amazon. I know I shouldn't support Amazon, but they show up so well. So I have to like... I'm going to double their
Are they their bird legs, feathers, think you think?
Yeah, they're bird feathers, but I think it would be just way too... Still be too short. What I'm doing it for euphoria.
Oh, yeah. You do the therapist react stuff, and I know you're doing...
Yeah, so I need bigger... Mm-hmm. It'd be too small.
We've been talking about your Arcane series because people love Arcane. And now you're going to do Euphoria? Oh.
Yeah, I did two already.
Oh, you did Jules and Rue already. Okay.
Yeah.
Are they just screwed up? I mean, that's really the answer, isn't it? They're just a mess.
Well, like they have maladaptive ways of dealing with things, right?
There you go. So. That's how a therapist talks. They're maladaptive. It's great to see you. Thank you for being here, Georgia. And
Thank you. Of course, if
Georgia Dow's here, we got to have the old doctor here. Owen
J.J.
Stone.
I have it in my contract.
Yeah, it's part of the deal. It's going to be one of those shows. The chat room is saying, oh, it's a Dr. Dow show.
They've kept my twit wife from me for so long, I had to go make a little pop of her.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
Isn't that you? Just so you know, I'm always here with you. You're always here with me. Right on my desk, Georgia. Just so you know, I know Ann's jealous, and no, Ann, you can't have one. It's mine.
This is my
little Georgia. I wrote your name on the back. Got a little cape on there and everything.
Oh, I love it.
You do love it.
Is that really Georgia? I mean, do you have a, what are those called? Funko toys?
Don't they look like the same person? I don't know. I'm just saying, Georgia has
a Funko Pop?
Hey, I don't know. Who does it look like to you? You know what I'm saying? You just saw, you know what I mean? I'm just saying.
It does, especially when she's in her cosplay.
Look, that is so cute. Oh my goodness.
Since I'm a doctor, you know I also keep my nurse with me, too. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. You have to. She's adorable, too.
Are you going to get the one of me? That's available.
The trash can or the dog?
Trash can is what the dog comes in. I don't know why they're showing the box the dog comes in.
It better be a special case. Oh, it's $39. It's probably one of those hard
cases. It's a pop shield protector to protect display box.
Why. I was literally like, why are they showing the box? That's silly. There we go.
Harry Dog. That's from Georgia. Georgia Bulldog. That kind of a dog. Anyway, good to have all three of you on a week that they're really the news is Ukraine. Notice we are blue and gold here in solidarity with the people of Ukraine who are suffering at the hands of a madman who has decided just unilaterally to invade that country. One of the things that there really are a bunch of tech stories associated with this war in Ukraine. First of all, Ukraine is the home of many, many very good tech companies. Some of our sponsors, in fact, Grammarly, one of our sponsors, was founded in Ukraine. The dev team is mostly in the Ukraine. Still, our hearts and prayers go out to everybody in Ukraine who are, I think, doing a great job defending themselves, surprisingly, against the Russian menace. I also want to say, I'll mention some other companies, but before I say that, I also want to say, I know we have many listeners both in Ukraine and Russia, and I think they're suffering on both sides all because of this guy Putin. I think the Russian people are great people, but you've got, as we have had in the past, you've got a bad leader. And so all of the reprobation from my end comes for Putin and his henchmen and the oligarchs, not for the people of Russia. They're suffering, too. Grammarly, Skylum is one of my... Do you ever use any of the Skylum products with your photography, O Doctor? They do Luminar, some really great tools. Scott Bourne was their
I was just talking to Ann about that. Luminar. Yeah. That's like the only good AI available.
It's really an interesting AI editor. And in fact, if you go to Skylum.com, at the very top of the page, Save Ukraine, Defend Democracy, and there's a whole page. It says, Skylum was proudly founded in Ukraine. Our core development center is based in Kyiv. And then here's the thing that kind of both touches me and breaks my heart. At this harrowing time, unfortunately, we cannot guarantee the on-time delivery of updates to Luminar Neo. Dudes, chill. It's okay. You've got more important things to do. Protect yourself. Protect your families.
Well, they also said that because you don't know how many people don't even know that that's where they're based at. You know, people just get on the internet and complain about things like, oh, that's why they have no idea. So you put that statement out there. So at least when somebody goes to check, it's like, oh, okay.
Yes.
I get it. You know.
Yes.
Just for the grumpies that get grumpy before they realize why they're grumpy.
A lot of tech companies use programmers in Ukraine. A lot of companies founded in Ukraine. And I know we have listeners in Ukraine, so we're thinking of you. We really are. The supply chain shortage we talk about, it's going to be more than Girl Scout cookies, both in Russia and Ukraine. The big export curves and then the shutting down of SWIFT, both are going to impact Russia hard in terms of technology. The thing that concerns me, and this was a story from NBC I saw earlier this week, that actually really scared me. Biden has been presented with options for massive cyber attacks against Russia. And this comes from NBC's sources, two intelligence officers with the U.S., one Western intelligence official, and another person briefed on the matter. Biden was presented with, now, I guess I would imagine in a case like this, the president is presented with many, many options. Not all of which are, you know, serious or on the table or not all of which he would actually consider. I'm hoping he doesn't consider these, including an attack on the Russian internet to disrupt internet connectivity across Russia, shutting off electric power, tampering with railroad switches. That did happen in Belarus. An individual hacker shut down the Belarus railway system a couple of weeks ago. A person briefed on the matter said you could do everything from slow the trains down to have them fall off the tracks. My concern is if we allow this conventional warfare to become cyber warfare, the damage goes worldwide and it comes right back to us. Lisa, does it seem to you that this is a war that we should not be fighting as a cyber war?
I think it's important to sort of reframe the war in general and to understand that if you talk to a lot of people in the tech security space, they're going to argue that we've been at war with Russia for quite a while anyway.
75% of all ransomware comes out of Russia.
You have to remember, Russia has been actively interfering in U.S. elections on national and local levels since at least 2014, if not earlier. I've been going to RSA every year since, I want to say, 2015, 2016. And this is something that I've heard in private one-on-one conversations with sources. This is something I've heard when I've sat in on sessions. This is something I've heard in keynotes, which is that the nature of 21st century warfare is cyber warfare. And it can be anything from destabilizing elections so that the population loses belief in the legitimacy of elections. It can be creating memes and monkeying with sources of information so that people don't know what sources of information to trust. And that helps erode a chance of a national dialogue where everybody is working from the same definition of reality. You do have state-sponsored agencies that have hacked into U.S. companies across all sectors, from transportation to utilities to retail to private security. These efforts have been ongoing for quite some time. What's a little unusual right now, I think, is that we have a story which has hit NBC, and I would suggest that the Biden administration has probably been floating it out there as a PSYOPs thing too, that says, you know what, we're going to take this war to cyberspace because that is where 21st century warfare is. I think it's a shift in how we are defining and looking at war. But these are activities that have gone on for quite some time already.
A spokesperson for the National Security Council told NBC, "This report is wildly off base and does not reflect what is actually being discussed in any shape or form." But it's kind of like Putin saying, "Hey, don't forget, we've got nukes."
They always say that, though. I'm not trying to belittle. So fun fact, my dad worked on nuclear subs through the 70s and 80s.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. And and I grew up, I'm a Gen Xer. So, you know, we grew up with the threat of nuclear war. And Leo, I'm sure you remember in the 80s when they had The Day After. Remember that TV movie, the whole thing? So at the time we were living in Tidewater, Virginia, and I was a kid and I was completely freaked out about, oh my God, what if the Soviets nuke us in our beds? How would we survive?
Oh, I lived my whole childhood in the fear of that.
Yeah, duck and cover.
I was born in 56, so we had duck and cover drills, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. We came very close to nuclear war in 1963. Yeah. In fact, I remember visiting McGeorge Bundy, who was the national security advisor to President JFK at that time. He's the guy who woke up Kennedy and said, "Mr. President, we found satellite photos of missiles in Cuba," and went through that. And I remember visiting his house, his apartment in New York City, and he had a really interesting thing on his coffee table. It was a month of October with some little pins in it. I said, "What's that?" He said, "Oh, yeah, JFK gave all of us that. That's the 10 days in October that we were, you know, coming, that we came within inches." He gives credit to his wife, Mary, because he came home one day from the White House and he said, we're this close to nuclear war with Russia. And she said, "McGeorge, you can't let that happen. You have to go in there and you have to fight for peace. You cannot let this happen." I don't think anybody knows. He talks about it in his memoirs, how close, but I remember talking to him about it, how close we came. And I feel like cyber warfare it's not as bad as nuclear warfare. You're not going to get a scorched earth, but if it escalates,
I feel like it's a little more corrosive in some ways.
We're living on the edge. We have 5 days of food, our financial system, our electrical grid, all of it's vulnerable.
If you take a look at how things unraveled in the early days of the shutdown in 2020, that did expose a lot of weaknesses in how the U.S. and the companies that live and work in the U.S. have chosen to structure like supply chains and transit. But, you know, if you do a little bit of reading, and one of the things I would love to recommend to everybody who's listening or watching this, Brad Smith, who is a president at Microsoft and its chief and Microsoft's chief counsel, wrote a fantastic book a couple of years ago that has it's basically a primer for what's going on right now, and it's called "Tools and Weapons: The Promise and Peril of the Digital Age." And in a couple of chapters, he lays out the surveillance that Microsoft, as a private company, has been doing on the Russian government for years, because Russia's state-sponsored agency has been doing things like trying to register domains that it can pass off as Microsoft domains to capture user information, sift through it, and then use it to break into places. Cyber warfare has proven super effective in some ways already. I mean, you take a look at the election 2016, 2020, you take a look at the Senate elections in 2018, there was evidence of interference there too. And we did include this link later in the show, but, you know, Russian meme factories and disinformation campaigns have been super effective throughout the pandemic as well.
You know,
when you're talking about siloed realities where people get together based on like affinity rather than like, rather than geographic connections or other, or even a sense of national thing, like that weakens a nation, and it's been super successful so far.
Yeah. I after seeing how surprisingly poorly Russia's fared in Ukraine, I feel like that maybe they will turn to this cyber war where even a small nation like, say, North Korea can hire enough hackers to be really disruptive in the world. We've got China, we've got North Korea, we've got Russia. I assume that we have capabilities, similar capabilities to the United States, but I would also hope that we would be careful about using those because of the risk to civilian populations.
That's the flip side of cyber warfare, is it affects civilians on such a greater scale and in ways I don't think anyone who hasn't been part of it can wrap their brains around, because it can affect everything from your ability to hit your bank balance to whether or not you have money in retirement to whether or not you're able to get gas to whether or not you're able to have the power on. It's an astonishing scope compared to street-to-street geographic warfare where people have the option to flee. We live in such a heavily networked international economy at this point that there will be people affected all over the place who are nowhere near where the fighting is. If you were to take this to a purely computer networked or a data first fighting angle.
Atlantic had an article that talked about a 1993 RAND memo, RAND report called, this is 1993, remember, Cyber War is Coming, exclamation mark.
Yeah.
The authors, I'll read you a little bit of it. The thesis of this think piece is that the information revolution will cause shifts both in how societies may come into conflict and how their armed forces may wage war. And they talk about cyber war, which is the kind of, you know, warfare we're talking about, bringing down, you know, a power grid or bringing down the water system, both of which, by the way, Russia has already done to Ukraine and what looks like a kind of a test of their capabilities. But they also talk about net war. We don't use that term nowadays. We call it disinformation. Societal level ideational conflicts waged in part through interneted nodes of communication. This was written in 93, before there was a Facebook, before there was a Twitter, before there were these mass disinformation campaigns. But these guys really kind of understood how this could be used against a population. You know, they say that one of the reasons the Nazis had such success is because Joseph Goebbels, the minister of propaganda, understood and used radio, the new technology of radio, so effectively. It could very well be that a country that doesn't, you know, Russia's, it's got an economy the size of Texas. It does have nukes, but it also, you know, you don't have to be this great economic power to have a very powerful cyber army, in effect. Georgia, tell us something to reassure us. Please.
Well, my thought is, like, really, you have to do something. You can't allow countries to just invade.
I agree.
And
it's
acquiesce
horrific.
And expect it to be okay. And if you don't want to get your people directly involved in a war, then you have to find other ways that are going to be able to stop this as quickly as possible with the least amount of people lives lost. So I think that attacking their infrastructure, you know, through the internet is probably a safer bet than bringing people in. And the fact that anyone uses the fact that they have nukes as a shield, that is you know,
horrific.
Something that of
horrific.
Course, but of course they're going to do that. They're going to do that for anything. They want to make this as fast and effective as possible to be able to take over as much land as they can. So I think that they should put every single card that they have that would be the safest and that would, you know, just be able to shut it down as quickly as possible. So I think that if they can do that through, you know, just shutting down the internet, you know, that will be a better option than having to send in troops, and it might be more effective.
Mm-hmm. I just worry that whatever we do can be responded to, and
but you know, aren't they already doing that?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, let's just say it. Like, they're not. They've already, like, Russia's already threatened nukes. So, like, it's not like they wouldn't choose to do this anyways. Like, you know, like nukes. Oh, and we'll shut down your internet, and then everyone's like, oh, okay, now we'll stop. Like, you know,
I mean, their economy is going to collapse tomorrow.
Yeah. No, they're turning off SWIFT, so you don't.
There was just something that came out that said Russia has just made it so that if you're a foreign investor in Russian markets, you can't exactly pull your money out of the Russian market right now.
Yeah.
So that's the action of a government that knows there's a huge run on banks today. There's going to be no more money tomorrow.
Monday is going to be crazy. Well, it'll be Monday soon in Russia, actually.
And, you know, they've got no airspace. They're effectively being fenced in. So they're going to be cut off from the internet. They're going to be cut off financially. And since Putin's power rested primarily in flexing some financial muscle, all he has left to negotiate with are nukes. But, and again, not diminishing the terror And
I just worry, you know, we
not diminishing the terror, but I think you can't, like, this sounds awful. The U.S. has professionals back in the State Department, and they've always had a deep bank of professionals and talent in the Pentagon. And I would not be surprised if they haven't gamed out all of the scenarios that are likely to happen and have figured out a way to let Putin sable rattle about the nukes and say, fine, this is what he's going to negotiate with. He has nothing else to negotiate with after that. Or to threaten with, and the U.S. has plenty, and we're not even officially involved yet.
So the bank's open in Moscow in about 5 hours. It'll be very interesting. We shall see. My fear is, you know, we have the thing that kept us from blowing each other up in the 60s was something called mutual assured destruction, MAD, which was the threat that if you did it, they would do it back, and the whole world would blow up. There is some deterrent that if we are too aggressive in pushing a cyber war against Moscow, that they will do it back to us. I'm hoping. I wonder if there should be a Geneva Convention. There should be Geneva Accords for cyber warfare.
It's funny you
say
that, because Brad Smith, again, to get back to the reading recommendations that came in, Microsoft's Brad Smith has been traveling the world giving a speech for the last 6 or 7 years, arguing that what we need is a new digital Geneva Convention.
I think so.
Which lays out the rights of every person in the world to be able to connect online with other people, to transact business online with other people, and most importantly, takes the responsibility for their own safety off of the shoulders of the individual and forces it onto the shoulders of government. And
he says,
so in other words, instead of Microsoft or Google being responsible for your internet safety, it becomes something where governments are held accountable if you're not safe online.
Yeah, I think Putin has essentially escaped.
Or if harm is done to you thanks to networked data.
Mm-hmm. Putin has essentially escaped responsibility for what I think we're starting to believe now really is, you know, at least tacitly, a tacit approval of the ransomware epidemic. This was back in 2017, I think, that Smith talked about a digital Geneva Convention. No targeting of tech companies, private sector, or critical infrastructure, and limit offensive operation to avoid a mass event. Commit to non-proliferation activities to cyber weapons. Exercise restraint in developing cyber weapons. I don't think we are doing any of those things on our part, because the other argument is the MAD argument, which is, well, operate from strength. The only deterrent to somebody, clearly a madman like Putin, is to have enough strength to say, yeah, well, don't mess with us.
Make him poor. I mean, this is the thing.
I agree.
The minute everybody who is super comfortable with their yachts and their,
you know what's going to happen,
all over Europe and their capacious Swiss bank accounts.
Already,
when they lose their assets, they're going to agitate for change.
Already, Russian billionaires are saying, we're not. Okay, stop. Okay, stop. Oh, doctor, you want to weigh in on any of this? You could say no.
it's not even that it's no. It's just in a broad scope of an idea, I'm against war in general.
Yeah, of course.
It always amuses me how mighty and how high-horsed we get when it's something we don't like. Oh. But when America does things.
I'm just as mad when we do that, too. Believe me.
I know we are, but I'm saying in general. I'm saying, like, I've been overseas when we were at war for decades, and the rest of the country is looking at me like, oh, you're an American. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the concept of how we get so high and mighty, like, oh, you want to do a cyber war? Go ahead, open Pandora's box. The real problem is you can have a Geneva Convention all you want to. America has been caught in the past doing things that are criminal against international law, and to think that Russia or any other agitator is going to listen to any kind of thing that you put out there. That's what the CIA is for. That's what the government, that, like, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Well, how do they get our weapons? How do they get these trucks? Do all these things behind it. I'm like, you're driving a U.S. tank. How did you get them? Because we make these deals behind closed doors, and when it blows up in our face, we're like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I was trying to do this. So when I listen to all these things, let's see what happens if they go broke tomorrow and figure it out from there. But the whole, like,
I have to say, we have not yet invaded Mexico or Canada. I wouldn't mind moving to Canada, but we haven't invaded. So we haven't marched across the lines of a sovereign state. We've gotten involved in wars we should not have been in Vietnam, in Syria, in Afghanistan.
We're the only nation in the world that has military bases on every single continent, all over the
planet.
That's
to protect. That's for security.
But we won't allow anyone to have them here. I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying we're the world.
The imperialism runs everywhere.
And I didn't hear all this excitement when Africa had genocide and nobody was helping them for decades on end. I mean, people were being.
I've seen people say, where was your concern for the Uyghurs? I agree. But
I'm happy NATO's finally doing something. NATO has been non-existent through anything in my lifetime that I can remember. At least I see now that they seem to be doing some things. I'm like, I just have a different concept of the whole global thing. Yes, it's wrong. Yes, we need to do things. But you can open up that Pandora's box if you want to. It's just going to be a rough situation because it only takes five dudes in the closet to shut down a city. Or shut down a block anywhere in the world.
That's the other thing that I think is interesting is warfare is completely different than it was even 20 years ago because of technology. For instance, there's a professor at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in Monterey, Jeffrey Lewis, who with his team of students was monitoring Google Maps, Google Maps in Ukraine. And before we even knew the invasion was happening, he knew because he could see on Google Maps road closures and the movements of Russian artillery from Russia into Ukraine because of Google Maps. I mean, this is now there are independent people using satellite photos to identify Russian convoys, tank movements. I'm reading from the Washington Post, by combining Google Maps traffic information with a radar image that showed troops, Lewis and his teams realized an invasion was underway hours before the news became public and from thousands of miles away in California. So their technology, which is ubiquitous, technology is now the Palantir, the all-seeing eye that we all, to some degree, more or less have access to. So I think this changes things a little bit. We are a little bit, look at the video we're getting. It's a very different experience.
Well, I think warfare changed when you had folks like Snowden and other people who chose to share information during a war and could disseminate that information quickly along multiple nodes. Like, there was no way to shut it down and disappear somebody. What is the name of that young woman? She's got that really great first name. Reality Winner.
Reality Winner. I almost said that and I thought, is that who she's talking about? She does have a great first name.
Well, there's that. Yeah. There was Snowden. The minute it occurred to people that they could dump information on the internet and let folks pick it apart and do with it what they would, that dramatically changed warfare, especially when you contrast it with how information was guarded through World War II, through all of the U.S.'s many, 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 many imperialist skirmishes after that. We don't have that kind of presumption of a cone of silence around intelligence anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing,
too,
because wars are won and lost on intelligence. I mean, you could argue that getting a hold of the Enigma machine is what won World War II.
Right. You could also, and by the way, it's interesting because the vice premier of Ukraine has tweeted that he wants hackers to come on over and help him. But then he asked them to do it on Telegram, and somebody should have explained to him Signal might be a better choice in that case. I'm not sure why Russia didn't completely shut down the internet in Ukraine. Usually when you invade a country, at least it's been my experience, in the old days, you would shut down the newspapers, radio stations, you shut down the communication media.
Well, you remember they shut down Estonia's internet.
Right.
They didn't do that
in Ukraine. I'm not sure why not.
Well, I think everybody learned from it.
Maybe it was hardened. Maybe they couldn't. You know what they are doing? Yeah. They're shutting down Twitter and Facebook in Russia because they don't want their own people
seeing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Which is telling. Elon Musk says
I don't think Russian people want war. I mean,
no, I think not. In fact, I think the best hope for peace at this point is that they overthrow Putin, which would come at a great, I'm sure, great bloodshed and loss to Russian lives.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. We live in such unusual times.
I think that's what Putin's afraid of. In fact, that's what happened in Ukraine. Putin had a strong man in there. Remember, he was horrifically corrupt, had built this palatial mansion, and there was a revolution, and they threw him out. He fled to Russia. He's still living in Russia. Zelensky was elected. And this exactly, that was the scenario I think Putin was most afraid of, is exactly that. Apple Pay is unavailable in Russia. Now that now we're talking hardship. No Google Pay, no Apple Pay. One Ukrainian leader, this is, puts Apple in an interesting bind. One Ukrainian leader called on Tim Cook to block Russian users from the App Store. What do you do if you're Apple or Google? Do you pull out of Russia?
That's a slippery slope. Again, we've been at war for as long as I can remember. I didn't agree with those wars. You're going to turn off my internet or my service because the government wants to go do what they want to do. I didn't get drafted. I didn't sign up. I didn't apply. So me as a regular citizen who now is struggling economically, struggling for food and all the necessities I need just to keep my family safe and alive. Now I can't even download Happy Flappy Birds. There's nothing to like get me through the night. Like, I mean, I'm making a joke about it, but as a regular citizen, they shouldn't get involved. They should leave it alone. That, like, again, it's a very slippery slope when you start getting into what you should shut down and what you should not, especially when we get so mad and so upset about things like TikTok. Like, oh, people don't like TikTok because America didn't make TikTok. And, you know, when you look at the way that they use the platform in other countries versus here, I get it. You know what I mean? There's manipulation, there's games, but it's not up to them to change things and shut things down for the regular common people. If you want to shut down Putin's account, sure. You got his number. I'm sure he's logged into the App Store. Shut him down directly. No flappy happy birds for him. Okay.
Mikhailo Fedorov, who is the Ukrainian, I think he's the deputy, let me get his title, Vice Prime Minister of Ukraine, Minister of Digital Transformation of Ukraine. He's been very active on Twitter calling on, he's the guy who called on Apple to shut down the App Store. He asked for help from Elon Musk, who said, okay, Starlink service is now active in Ukraine, more terminals en route. Talk about instant response, right? He's called on YouTube to turn off monetization of Russia today. They did. He's the one who said, we're creating an IT army. We need digital talents. All operational tasks will be given here on Telegram. IT Army of Ukraine. I don't know why URRAINE, but that I checked. That's the actual address. There will be tasks for everyone. We continue to fight on the cyber front. The first task is on the channel for cyber specialists. This is really interesting, how important cyber warfare has become in this. Twitter just made the decision to block Russians the opportunity to register new accounts in the Russian Federation. And then, of course, the Russians retaliate by shutting Twitter down. Ukraine's asking for Bitcoin donations, cryptocurrency donations, Ethereum, Bitcoin, and Tether. He posted the wallet addresses for the three. Russia may be forced to rely on Bitcoin. If now that SWIFT is shut down, the banks are getting cut off, Bitcoin may be the only hope for Russia. Crazy.
So war is such a weird thing, right? Because at the end of it, you always go back and you look at the finances, you know, what military company built all the bases, who made all the ammunition. Like when you're Russia and you cut off all their money, no matter how they get money, who are you going to pay to do anything? Because if you need something, it's just like here, we had to make stuff. We had to do things on our own. Like if they're doing things, they don't need to pay anybody. They're just taking over companies and small businesses. Be like, yo, go make us a car, a tank, a plane, or ammunition. I don't feel like they're going to be paying anybody to try and fund their war. It's just a weird game to be playing. Like I said, tomorrow, We're going to find out how economically strong Russia thinks they are. Because Bitcoin ain't going to save them. I'll tell you that right now. There's going to be a whole lot of people siphoning money into their own bank accounts where they go pay for a new tank or a new plane.
I imagine there'll be a run on the banks. I would guess. Yeah. I don't know.
There's already a run on the
banks. Yeah. ATM lines are currently already lining up.
Yeah.
But that's where, just sounds that's terrifying. Where, that's where, you know, shutting down, like if the people in Russia get angry enough to say, you know what, this is affecting me and we're really upset, it may make Putin think twice about what he's doing and perhaps decide to go into negotiations with a little bit more seriousness. Like if people can't get their flappy bird and they're angry enough and then Putin's like, oh, wait a second, this might create, like the only thing that he cares about is his own power and being able to take as much control as he can as quickly as possible. If the people in Russia are angry enough because they don't get flappy bird, well, maybe they'll put a little bit more pressure and maybe Putin will be like, they can't get flappy bird. Now it's serious. Because that's what's going to cause pressure to him. Like he's expecting this to be like he thought going into this that this was going to be regular warfare. But someone's doing a country and it's not the people. They don't deserve this. I'm fully aware of that. But it's a small price in comparison to how many lives it could save if we end up being able to shut down so that then they decide to negotiate a little bit sooner.
Hit him where like it really
actually,
hurts.
Yeah.
Where the people, Fedorov, we've also asked Netflix to block the Russian Federation access to Netflix. Now that hurts.
It's a small price. No, like, isn't it a small price to save lives?
Yes.
And it could really, like, again, when people get frustrated, like, unfortunately, we're so short-sighted as humans that we really only care when it affects us, right? Like, other people, we see other bad things happening to other people, we're like, meh, that's horrible for them. But we don't usually think about it. When it starts to affect us, we're like, oh, wait a second, I can't get flappy birds. Now I'm upset. Let's do something. You better stop.
All right. Anyway, just kind of a rundown of some of the tech stories. There's also, we talked with Rod Pyle, there's also the issue of the International Space Station, which is half owned by Russia, is supplied by Russia, rockets launched from Russian territory. There's some real legitimate concern. NASA says, don't worry about it. I would hope that Roscosmos, the Russian NASA, would, you know, act as if this is a non-political issue. But in fact, the director of Roscosmos has already started to do a little saber rattling. They've suspended Soyuz rocket launches. He's saying we're going to withdraw our staff from the Guiana Space Center where the Soyuz rockets are launched. I don't know how this will affect the ISS, but it's pretty serious. Rod was concerned, very, very concerned about this.
In all seriousness, I'm not worried about that at all. We have the Space Force.
Okay. Just I don't think Steve Carell is going to save us here.
Hey. I know our last president set it in place. We have a space force.
No, we really do have a space force. That's real. That's not fair.
So I told all seriousness.
In
you
all seriousness.
About, don't need to be worried about. We got the space force. Does Afghanistan have a space force?
By the way, that is another place.
Does Russia have a space force? We got a space force.
That is another place I do not want. You know, bad enough to have cyber warfare and collateral damage. Let's not start a war in space. Let's not start a war in space.
We can start a war in space. We're the only ones with Space Force. We own space. Come up here if you want to. We're the only ones.
I want the Space Force pin that looks just like the Star Trek pin. I'm sorry, Lisa, your internet is, I think Lisa's frozen. I don't think she would hold that look for very long.
Thank goodness, though. Thank goodness it's a good look. Whenever I'm worried about being frozen, I'm like, just make sure it's not like while I'm like opening my mouth really wide.
It's always bad luck. In fact,
shut it down for me if that happens.
I used to take great pleasure in freezing CNN at the worst possible time. Always trying to get Anderson Cooper in a compromising pose. Go ahead, Lisa. I think your internet's back.
Oh, well, see.
Maybe not.
This would be a good time to streak, Uncle Leo.
She has moved into a new position.
She'll be really shocked.
No. Streak is in your job, Uncle Leo.
Oh, that kind of streak. Yes, our sponsor's streak.
I went there, too.
Yeah. I was going to take off my clothes.
Don't look at me like that, Owen. Don't look at me like that.
It's your fault. Actually, they must have known you guys were going to be on the show when they decided to sponsor this episode of This Week in Tech. Our show today brought to you by Streak. Streak is a CRM built for Gmail. If you use Gmail, you will love Streak. Imagine running your business from your inbox. Well, you probably already are, right? Mail is everything. But wouldn't it be nice to have a CRM that integrates with your Gmail inbox and helps you keep track of sales or fundraising or hire or support or whatever you're doing, all your processes, without leaving Gmail? Streak's free email tools will help you check if emails have been opened, send bulk emails with automated follow-ups to improve your response rate, and all of this without leaving Gmail, all part of your everyday workflow. You can see details about your leads, your customers, your investors, right next to your email. And by the way, this is Google loves this. They were recognized as Google's Technology Partner of the Year. Streak is beloved by thousands of founders and entrepreneurs and small business owners who've discovered this is the way to operate, the way to do business. No more switching between Gmail and other tools. Keep track of everything going on in your business, whether you're prospecting for new customers or you're raising another round of funding or growing your team or managing support tickets. The whole thing comes down to Streak, what they call pipelines. Pipelines are brilliant. What a brilliant way to manage mail. Track all your processes directly from Gmail. It's easy. You'll be setting up your first pipeline. You'll get it immediately in just a couple of minutes. And then you customize the pipelines based on your needs, like filters on steroids. It's incredible. You can collaborate. It makes it very easy to automatically share emails, share notes. It's a brilliant, brilliant idea. I think you're going to love Streak. And great news, it's free to use on your own. So you can try it right now, streak.com/twit. And if you decide you want to go with the pro plan, their most popular option, it's 20% off your whole first year when you go to streak.com/twit. Try it free for yourself, or right now get 20% off the pro plan, Streak, streak.com/twit, for project management, for keeping track of customers, of leads, investors. What a brilliant idea. Streak, streak.com/twit. 20% off right now for your whole first year. Ms. Schmeiser, are we okay in there? Is she still frozen? She reconnected and froze immediately.
Yeah, tap it a little harder.
Does that work? Percussive maintenance.
That's the way that we handle most of our tech problems.
See?
So are you good at Elden Ring, Georgia? Are you good at it?
Am I good at it? In a short answer, no. In a long answer, no.
I really want to play it.
I'm not good at it. It's just the button config. Like, I think that if I had more practice at a button config that was like similar to it, I wouldn't be drinking potions instead of slashing with the sword, right? Like, that's my biggest issue with it, is that suddenly I'm like hit, but I've actually just drank
three potions. It's such a hard game. I've been watching Twitchers, you know, really, I mean, a lot of these people on Twitch are really good at games, and I've been watching them die and die and die again. Fortunately, as you pointed out, when you get clobbered, I hate to use the word die, when your character gets biffed in the game, you don't lose anything. You could just go back.
You just lose like some of the cash rewards, like the right stuff that you can,
the drops,
you can, which is which is not horrible, right?
This is the game that came out on Thursday. Everybody's been talking about it. It is so hard that the creator, Hidetaka Miyazaki, says, I apologize if you're frustrated.
Don't send him tweets. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. The Dark Souls games, if you've ever played those, they're widely known. I've never played because I watch Michael, our 19-year-old, play, and it looks like a lot of fun. It's all about bosses, and it looks like a lot of fun. It's so hard. And so I've always known it's too hard for me, but I did buy it because I really wanted to do it. Believe it or not, the New Yorker had a whole interview with Miyazaki. He says, death is a feature, not a bug.
That sounds so beautifully philosophical.
Well, if you look at it like that, right? If you look at it like that, then it's just a challenge that you're going to, like, if you go into the game knowing that you are going to die 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And that's just, you're there to learn, right? Like, so I guess it could be a good way of dealing with, you know, resilience, learning to get back up.
Yes.
Right?
There you go.
Fall down 6 times, get up 7. That could be the learning curve that you have to go through when you're playing Elden Rings. But if you look at Elden Ring and you play it that way, like, it's frustrating because you're doing the same thing very repetitively over and over again. But, you know, there are ways to beat bosses. I've seen people that are able, like, beating bosses that are way above their skill levels are, and people can be amazing at it.
Oh, so. And that's the other thing. It is fun to watch somebody who's good at this because you have to dodge and parry and roll and jump and time. And in a lot of it, it looks like that you have to really understand the boss's attack sequence so that you know when your moment has come. You also have to be very, my problem is I'm too impatient. I just go in there and they go, and it's over. You have to be patient. This is from the New Yorker article about Miyazaki. The video game director, who's in his late 40s, has punished more players than perhaps anyone else. In Dark Souls, the 2011 fantasy game that made him famous, you play as a loincloth-clothed wretch racing through sewers and cowering in forests. You're attacked by a giant wolf, pugilist mushrooms, mephitic swamps, and a sword-wielding spider. If you fail to parry an aggressor's lunge or tumble off a rampart, you're greeted by a superfluous message. You died. After it fades, you're reincarnated beside a bonfire, one of a series of checkpoints scattered throughout this mysterious, vaguely medieval world. Of course, every one of your enemies has respawned as well. You know, I'm glad the New York, we finally got the New Yorker treatment for a video game. I think this is very good.
Are you in the Discord, Uncle Leo?
I can. What are they? Oh, stop that. Stop that. What are they doing? They're posting pictures of me.
In a flowery grave. But that's not what I'm talking about.
This is, by the way, this is me playing Elden Ring. Yeah.
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 That's how you set it up at home.
Yeah.
I'm an elf. I'm so confused.
I just put in a video to scroll down to the bottom, not to the top.
Okay.
That's you speaking. And it's a YouTube video. Like, it's a guy who talks about how hard video games are, Asian video games are. You just have to let it play for like a minute. So, like,
he says, Asian is a difficulty mode. Okay, this is not racist though, right? You're not going to make me play.
No, it's everyone understands how
he steps on a twig and dies immediately.
Yes,
steps on branch. Stepped on branch.
And then the next one will be, he's like, wait, what? So long story short, it's like breathes air. And then once it gets to a minute, his character dies. And the reason is emotional damage. And he's like, from emotional damage. Like, it just comes more ridiculous.
Some people explain this. You know, he actually says there's an Asian mode. Some people like really, really hard video games. Why is that? Do you know, Georgia, do you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, it's one is that it makes them feel like they can do things that other people can't, just like people that do extreme sports. It causes that adrenaline rush. And then you get this huge dopamine hit. So the harder it is to accomplish something, the bigger your brain rewards you for being able to do it. And so building that kind of resiliency and that delay of gratification is, one, it's actually really good for us. Like, to be able to
do
that
is it the modern day marshmallow test?
It's the marshmallow that kills you first.
Yes.
Yes. It's kind of like the modern test.
I have a question about that. Would it be, is it because the difficulty puts you kind of in a flow state where you can tune out everything else and you're so thoroughly engaged that gives you a sense of satisfaction too?
I love that you mentioned flow state, which is like a really cool thing. So flow state is when you lose time and space, nothing else matters, and you're just vibing. It's just you and whatever you are doing. And like, hours could go by and it feels like minutes. Now, for me, I am definitely not in a flow state when I play Elden Rings, but I have heard from a lot of other people that they are, that it doesn't even bother them that they've died. They're just gaining information and learning how to do something better. And so, yes, they can be in that flow state while they're playing this really horrible game. Now, I am not in that state. I am feeling frustrated and angry.
Yes.
So I have not reached that level of gaming capacity.
It's irritating. I don't want to feel bad.
I feel bad about me. It makes me feel bad about myself and my competency, right?
Go ahead. Owen's raising his hand.
As a doctor myself, can I say one?
Please, Owen.
You're a podcast doctor, but okay, I'll take it.
He plays a doctor on TV.
First of all, in 2010, I was over Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil in the Apple podcast store. I had real doctors reaching out to me, not understanding why I was number one in the podcast space. So I am, oh, doctor, as my professional, not realistically professional opinion, as I was about to say, we call that the zone, okay? Being in the zone. Fans people call it the flow. The zone.
Yeah, basketball players hit the zone. Football players hit the zone. And then just flows. Yeah.
And then let me finish what I'm saying. Secondly, it's the same reason I don't subscribe to participation trophies. It's the same reason I blocked every shot the lead tried to put up against me. I didn't give her nothing. Because guess what? She cried about it the first 8 times. And then when she finally made a bucket on her own, the joy of actually succeeding was beyond all compare. I raised her and her friends as a genius that I am. I raised them at 4 years old. I beat them down. I raised them at 5 years old. I beat them down. I raced them at 8. My legs are still bigger than theirs, and I beat them. And to this day, they still talk about how fast I am. No matter how rotund I am, they remember me beating them down in the leg race, and I am the fastest man on earth compared to those children. So it's all about succeeding, but you got to go through the trials and tribulations first. Mm-hmm. Leah had a karate contest. She didn't practice. I told her, hey, you better practice. She gets up there. She got a little rinky-dink coin, and all the kids got a big trophy that won. She started crying. She's like, why didn't I get one of those? I said, well, you should have been practicing. You got to earn it. So that's what the game's for. When it's hard, you earn it. All the joy when you play on easy, you don't even feel good about yourself. You're like, man, look, I ain't anybody watching. I guess I'll put it on easy. You don't feel good about it. But when you're on medium/hard, all the success, the small victories, the joys, Uncle Lee, the zone, as it were, my professional opinion.
Leah learned that lesson because she went back and she's a champion, isn't she? Champion wrestler.
She is. Case in point of that, too. So she won her little first girl to win the championship thing in the tournament. Beginning of the season, start off great. End of the season, she had regionals. When you're in, losing, you're out. She lost to this girl. This girl was jacked. And I mean, like, the girl wasn't better than her, but she was just stronger than her. Now Leah's in here eating protein shakes, lifting after school every day. Like, she's out here riding my spin bike. Like, she's like, I got to get weights. So that motivation of when something you have to work for and earn is what does it, whether it's in sports or video games or, shoot, even starting a business. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but you got to keep at it. Next thing you know, you're Leah LaPorte. You own an empire. Out there, San Francisco Bay adjacent.
That's why I've been doing the thumb exercises, the forefinger exercises. I'm getting ready for Elden Ring. It's uncomfortable. I know it's difficult, but I will prevail.
You're what I consider retirement. Okay, you're just a grandpa having fun talking about your dexterity will not allow you to win. Out here playing for
I got
fun.
No twitch.
I mean, watch the kid play it. You know what I mean? Put the movie on, and it's like watching a movie when they're playing it. You know what I mean? When a kid's good. So
many years ago, I interviewed a guy named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who is.
Did you really?
Yes, he wrote the.
That is the coolest thing.
Yes.
Sorry.
And this was before.
Like, probably only other therapists are like, oh my God. And everyone's like, who do you
Before anybody ever talked about flow, he wrote a book called Flow. Here he is at his TED Talk back in 2004. Yeah. That described this state, and he said it's what makes life worth living. And I'll never forget it. I mean, it was a very interesting, he's a very interesting fellow. But me, even though I'd never heard anybody use this phrase, the zone or flow before, I immediately got what he was talking about. And we all have some experience of the world disappears and you're just focused. And I remember in acting, you do these exercises to bring up your energy, but it's not uncontained energy. You want to bring your energy up, but seem relaxed at the same time. And it's flow. It's the centered flow where you have the energy, but it's contained. So I think if anybody can experience it, I don't know if this Elden Ring is exactly the key to flow, But I guess, you know, well, if you're really good at it, you probably are.
Or yeah. Or if you don't mind dying and you just enjoy being immersed in something. Like, there's all kinds of unusual activities that some people might find flow in and really be able to enjoy it. And interestingly enough, for anxiety levels, when you hit flow, your levels of anxiety go down. It's soothing. Like, you're just in a zone, and your levels of dopamine and opiates, you feel just really good and usually more energized afterwards, as long as you're eating and drinking and doing all the other things that you need to do as well. You don't want to get lost in it, because some people can do a flow activity and then they're just, you know, gone if they didn't pay their taxes.
But there's also a somewhat more negative mechanic going on. Kind of the Skinnerian, you know, Skinner box mechanic, where you're punished and punished and punished, and then you beat this boss, and you even mentioned this. There's this high of success, just like you gamble when you go to the mm-hmm. tables and you lose and you lose and lose. The worst thing that can happen to you in Las Vegas is winning, because then you want to get that again. And yes. There's also that mechanic, isn't it? It's not just flow. It's also this mechanic of, I want that endorphin rush that I got when I killed the boss last time.
See, I think there's a really great chapter.
All of us want to talk. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. You start, Lisa, and then I'll let Georgia, and then I'll let Owen. Yeah. How about that?
There's a really beautiful chapter in John Krakauer's Into the Wild. Are you guys familiar with that book?
Oh, love that book, yeah.
Yeah, it's about... he tries to retrace the steps of Christopher McCandless, mm-hmm. who gained notoriety for starving to death in a bus in the Alaskan wilderness under circumstances that were mostly preventable. Not here to litigate that whole thing right now, because it's ongoing. But he has a beautiful chapter where he describes talking about hiking the... I'm going to mess up the pronunciation because I've only ever read the Steinkjer ice cap. And Krakauer describes the brutal process of inching up and placing your feet very carefully, and scree falls away. And what he talks about is how a quote unquote a trance-like state settles over your efforts. The accumulated clutter of day-to-day existence, the lapses mm-hmm. of conscience, the unpaid bills, mm-hmm. all of it is temporarily forgotten, crowded from your thoughts by the overpowering clarity of purpose and by the seriousness of task at hand. And then he ends the chapter by pointing out that, like, once you've achieved this great thing, quote unquote, the climb is over, the only place to go is down. And listening to you guys talk
about the
emotional intensity of being able to master this really tough task and having the joy of dropping into the moment and feeling that purposefulness and that accomplishment. And then when it's done, you're like, lever, press the lever again. This like, that's the flip side to that beautiful moment of knowing yourself in intense focus and purposefulness is it just, it ends.
I interviewed
and when you guys are talking about the game, it's the same thing.
I interviewed Krakauer in 96 after he wrote his book about Everest, Into Thin Air.
Into Thin Air, yeah. Oh,
incredible. Incredible mm-hmm. story. And, you know, I was thinking about that. Netflix has a show called 14 Peaks, which if you haven't seen it, is worth watching. Yes. It's a documentary about, you know, all of the people who summit Everest, mm-hmm. Going back to Sir Edmund Hillary, really did it because they had Nepalese Sherpa who did it for them or helped them or led the mm-hmm. way or set the lines. And these Sherpa never get the credit they deserve. It's always Edmund Hillary at the press conference, not Tenzing mm-hmm. Norgay, his Sherpa. So 14 Peaks is about a Sherpa, a Nepali mountaineer who wanted to do it for the Sherpa, to get the credit for the Sherpa. And he did something no one has ever done before. In 7 months, he summited all 14 of the world's 8,000-meter peaks. And it is harrowing, but it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, I suspect that he also does it for the zone, that moment of leaving the world's cares behind. And boy, he must feel that letdown when he gets down, because he went right back up and went right back up and went right back up. Of course, once you finish 14 peaks in 7 months, then you're really going to have a letdown. It's a great story. And a lot of credit goes to Nimsdai Pooja, who is the Sherpa who did all 14 peaks in 7 months.
I got to figure out how to write a book on how to control that, right?
Because if you could turn it on and off.
So growing up when I was younger, I lived a life where I had everything. We were really well off. And then we were poor. And then I had everything again. And then I was middle ground. And so when I turned 21, I went to Atlantic City, put $1,000 on black. I hit it. For the next 5 years, every year on my birthday, I went down there and I hit it. I doubled my money. I walked out. Didn't bet on anything else. Didn't play.
Wow.
The sixth year I lost, I never played again. I went out to Vegas with my buddies for a bachelor party. We're waiting in line to check in our hotel. I put a quarter in the slot. I won $800. I didn't gamble a dollar the rest of the week I was there. And everybody's like, yo, you're hot. I was like, look, bro, I made my money. I didn't hit this thing. Shut it down. Like,
you're a rare individual, though. Most people can't do that.
I know. When I hear that all the time. So I'm like, man, people just chase the high.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I had the high. That was great. Cool. And once the high goes away or something messes it up. But like I said, once I lost, I walk in the casino, put the $1,000 down. I watch the boards and I pick my one and get my feel. But as soon as I hit it, I take that money. I walk out. And the 1 year when I lost, I haven't done it again. I'm up like $6,000. I'm like, I'm good. That quarter, there's nothing better than I'm going to do in Las Vegas than put a quarter in the slot and win almost $2,000, no matter what I do.
And as you know, because you're a smart fella and you know statistics, there's no such thing as a hot streak. You have exactly the same chance of losing next time that you did the first time and will in the subsequent times. So are you, maybe you're not an addictive personality. You think that's it, Georgia? That it's some people are addictive personalities and they want that high. And once they experience it, they have to get it back. Is that's amateur psychology? I'm sorry.
No, I think that you're accurate in a certain state. I think that everyone has different things, though, that they could be addicted to.
That's
right?
True.
Like, you have to just know what are the pits that are in front of you.
Oh, so Doctor is addicted to barbecue, not. I think.
That might be a good thing.
Hey, I got one bag. And I mean, long noodles. I said, well, I might as well get two. It's 2 for $5. I might as well get two.
I just want to say, don't ask me. But I really used my connection, and I got Owen to send me his macaroni and cheese recipe. Don't worry, Owen. No one will ever know.
Yeah. Look, first of all, the internet. Every time I get a chat, people want my cookbook to come out. I got to do it. But I'll tell you what. You must know that I love you as an individual.
I know, because when you said that to me, I thought, oh my God.
The mother.
I was excited when Odoctor just gave me emoji. I think that I'm. I made it Christmas Day.
And two batches.
Was it?
It was so good. but it was also a heart attack in a jar.
Yeah. As I wrote it out, I felt really bad sending it to you. That's why I said, you know, you're not going to eat all of this and it's going to be super. I felt really bad. I'm like, if he dies from this, it's going to be my fault. I got to email.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. So I split it into two batches. One batch, I put Calabrian chilies in it to add a little color and spice. And then I knew that some people would not want the spicy one. So I just made this the traditional Odoctor. That is the and I cooked it in the Traeger. I smoked it for 4 or 5 hours.
That's kicking up and smoking. That's what I do sometimes.
Holy
you put it in that smoke instead of that smoking. But it was good though. Just tell the people, Leo, like because they can't taste it through the screen. You know what I mean? When you ate it was
pictures.
It's a meal almost in itself.
Not only did I not take pictures, I will never make it again.
Look, I didn't get this big for nothing. It is horrible, but it tastes so good.
It is so good.
It tastes so good. So when I gave it to my daughter to take to her Thanksgiving with her mother, she wouldn't even share it with the rest of the family. She's like, you can't have this. This is for me. And you're not allowed
I
to
am eternally
it.
Grateful. Oh. We took you and Leah out to a restaurant and had their lobster mac and cheese. I thought it might compete. You were very polite about it. You said it's fine. Now that I've tasted yours.
Now you know.
You get it.
Now you know
the life of lobster. It didn't compete. Wow.
Yeah. If lobster mac and cheese is not as good as regular Odoctor mac and cheese,
wait till I put some lobster and crab in mine. It gets crazy. But we got to get back to talking about technology before we get.
Oh, no. This is way too much fun. I've actually because we have so few stories. I've been filling basically. Just like your mac and cheese, I've been filling.
Super filling.
I made a prime rib, mac and cheese, biscuits. I think I'm surprised people didn't die at the table. I really am. It was
so good.
It was so good.
So good.
Have you ever had the Dungeness crab mac and cheese? that's, oh my God, I'm now blanking on the place. It's in Marshall, like right on the edge of Tamales
Bay. Oh, no, that sounds good.
Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the place.
In December and January in Northern California, we get, I think it's the best crab in the world. It's better than king crab from Alaska. It's better than Baltimore's amazing soft shell crab. It's called Dungeness, Dungeness crab, and it only is a few months a year.
We'll start, I'll fly out.
You know what? Next Christmas, we should go. It's a Marshall mac and cheese.
Oh, it's Nick's Cove.
Yeah, I love Nick's Cove.
Yes, Nick's Cove has the best Dungeness mac and cheese I've ever had in my life. I've taken a day off just to drive out there, have the mac and cheese, and drive home.
Tell me you don't want to go here, oh doctor.
Wow.
It's so good. The views are phenomenal. They have like everything about it is just.
That's actually the bay. That's Tamales Bay, which is the most amazing bay of the Pacific Ocean because it's pristine. They grow oysters there. Hog Island oysters are amazing because it's the water. You could see to the bottom. It's incredibly pure and pristine.
And this, despite the fact it's got like thriving seal colonies, I kayak out there and across the bay with Tamales Bay, there's a white elk reserve. So if you're lucky, you'll be kayaking on the bay and you'll see the elk come down from the hills in Marin and you can hover off of Hog Island, so named because people used to pasture their pigs there and let them root around and eat acorns. And
is that why they call it Hog Island? Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
So if you get just the right point in the bay off Hog Island, you can hear the boom from the Pacific at the mouth of the bay as it's coming through.
So beautiful.
There's a colony of seals that likes to hang out and sleep near there.
I almost died.
It's just a beautiful afternoon.
Almost died in Tamales Bay. I was kayaking out there. My friend and I had strapped a grill to the tip of the kayak and brought oysters. We kayaked
like a
out.
Horrible idea.
We kayaked out to, there's a little island out there. We barbecued oysters. We ate the oysters, strapped the grill back to the kayak, started coming back, and the wind changed, and the waves got this big, and we're going, are you all right back there? I'm all right. And we just barely made it back. And then we got back. The kayak rental place said, yeah, we were watching. Why didn't you rescue us? Here's a picture.
Because they were watching for their kayaks.
Yeah, they were worried about the kayak. Here's a picture of the signature dish, the Dungeness crab mac and cheese. All right.
I want some Dungeness crabs.
All right, next time you're out here, old doctor, you and Leah will,
so
Lisa and I
good.
Will take you. If Georgia wants to come, if
I'll
Lisa
come.
Wants to come,
I'm here.
We'll oh, have please. A yes. we'll do a yes. twit at Nick's Cove. That would be awesome.
Oh, that would be perfect. Let's
that
do
would
it
be
live
awesome.
There.
Yeah.
And, coming out next month, and my daughter started crying. I was like, dude, you got school. She's like,
you're not bringing her?
Like, she's got school.
You know why she wants
she
to
can't
come
see
out?
Him anymore, huh?
Last time she was here, Lisa took her jewelry shopping.
Yeah, they got to hang out.
Do not ever go jewelry shopping with Lisa.
Look,
that sounds wonderful. I'm sure Lisa has amazing taste.
She has amazing taste, and I think Leah got a little present.
Yeah, she got presents. She got socks. She got Petaluma socks. Like it's funny too because I just emailed Lisa the other day. Lisa gets brought up every other week because people are just like, oh, Leah, that's a nice ring. That's a nice necklace. And she just full board jumps into, I was a son and I met Lisa took, and we were. And so,
things are Leah does not sound week. Like that. I just want to say.
it's annoying to me because in the AMA, I was asked this week on Twit about me getting to go out shopping with the black card. I'm the one that brought up the black card. I'm the one that brought it up.
Yeah.
And I didn't get taken shopping.
No. Leah did. Yeah. Hey, by the way, that was one of our events this week. Georgia, have you done yours yet or yours coming up?
My what?
Fireside
like a
chat, we call
one. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly, with Ant. It was
and
lovely.
Oh, Doctor's done one. Ant puts these together for our club only. Mike
we
Elgin.
Should have had one with Owen and I together, and then we would have just overtaken everything. It would have been last night, and then there would have been no show. We would have just talked.
I'm just telling you, Ant. Therat is coming up March 31st. We're going to do one with Paul Therat. This is what we're trying to do is make Club Twit an exciting, enticing place to be. The original idea was people said, well, we don't want to hear all the ads. We don't want any ad tracking technology. So we said, well, you know what? If you give us $7 a month, which is about what we would make on you from ads, you don't have to have any ads. And so that's how Club Twit was born. It was Lisa's idea. Ad-free versions of all the shows that are just yours. But turns out the Discord, which is another benefit, we just thought, well, let's give them another benefit. Turns out to be really one of the great benefits. So much fun to hang out in there. All sorts of conversations, not just about our shows, but with our hosts. Stacey has a book club. We have the Untitled Linux Show. And then we have all of these conversation pits on everything. Crypto, food, gaming, hacking. We have a Let's Play group where we have a dedicated, actually now two dedicated Minecraft servers just for the club. And then there's the Twit Plus feed where you could hear George's Fireside Chat, Oh Doctors Ask Me Anything, the upcoming Paul Thurrott, Stacey's Book Club, the Untitled Linux Show, the Giz Fizz, all the shows that are... by the way, we've been... Well, I'll tell you in a second what we've been doing in there. But if you want to join, twit.tv/clubtwit. There's a little plug for it. Now, that, by the way, was an ad that the people who are Club Twit members did not hear. So if you're hearing it, go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and you'll never have to hear this ad again. We are also going to start using this to launch new shows. And the very first show we've launched in there that we're about to make public, This Week in Space, is starting on Friday with Rod Pyle and Tarek Malik. Tarek comes from space.com. Rod is from the National Space Society. He's a contributor to the Tech Guy radio show. That is ready to launch and go public. So go to twit.tv/twists. You can sign up, get on the feed, get links or whatever. And the first episode, there's an episode zero, but episode one is this Friday. It has been club members only. We're now going public with that. All right, let's take a little break. More with a great panel. Lisa Schmeiser is here. Brand new job, No Jitter, at nojitter.com. What is No Jitter?
It's a site that focuses on communication from telecom and telephony all the way up through collaboration platforms like Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Slack, WebEx. Basically, if you want to talk to somebody over the internet, it starts with the end user and goes all the way down to the network infrastructure.
Wow. That sounds like a thing I'm going to have to subscribe to. And it's open to the public? It's free or is it a paid?
It's open to the public. We're free.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nojitter.com. A great name.
Yeah. Part of my scope now, I'm also co-chairing a conference called Enterprise Connect. It's next month from March 19th to the 24th, enterpriseconnect.com. We're done in Orlando. We'll be talking about emerging issues like meeting equity, which is becoming a bigger deal as more and more workplaces go hybrid. We'll be talking about the emergence of AR and VR in the workplace and how that's going to shape how you do your job. Taking a look at some of the security challenges that come up with Zoom and Slack. You know, all this stuff that people are going to have to just kind of casually incorporate into their workspace in the next few years.
You can find out about that as well at nojitter.com. Enterprise Connect coming up in March. Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on the new gig. That's great.
Thank you.
Well
Thank
done.
Thank you.
Also, Georgia Dow, I'll ask you about your YouTube channel soon. And, Oh Doctor, I'm not going to ask you anything.
You don't want to ask me?
I don't want to know. It's not that I...
Aw.
He's got a Funko Pop of Georgia. When are we getting a Funko Pop of Oh Doctor?
One of the AMA questions was, is there still a podcast with you and Georgia in the works? I said, I got to work on it now. She said, this afternoon. I let her slide, but now I got to get her. I think I'm a Funko Pop. I'm going to start guilt tripping her. I'm going to work on her, guys. Yeah,
would you do a Funko Pop podcast?
Podcast life.
Or a Funko Pod, as we call them?
I mean, I could. I got George Jefferson over here on deck. I mean, I got a whole bunch of...
Where did those come from? They're just big head bobbleheads, right? Is that really...
They don't bobble, but they big. I mean, their heads is big.
Just they don't bobble?
No, they don't bobble. They don't even like rotate.
Seems like they're missing a bet there. They really could have made those bobble heads. And...
Infringement. Anyway, we got to pay bills. Talk to me.
Okay. Now they have Squid Game Funko Pops.
You can't be trusted.
Our show today, actually, this is for all the cooks in the audience. This is the place to get your produce, your vegetables. imperfect foods. Now, don't be fooled by the name. I think they're perfect. But the idea is Imperfect Foods was founded because they found out that a huge amount of food in the U.S. food system was wasted, just fell through the cracks. Produce grocers said, well, I can't carry that apple. It's too small. Or meats or vegetables or even snacks that there's too much of it or nobody's buying, whatever. You can now get it. It's a grocery delivery service, but it offers a line of sustainable groceries that taste delicious, reduce waste, and embrace the natural imperfections in food. The chickens, the heritage chickens I get from Imperfect Foods are amazing. I will eat no other now. They're pasture-raised heritage chickens, incredible snacks, and the produce. It's always fresh seasonal produce. Okay, I admit, they're not apples the size of your head. They're apples like they used to be when I was a kid, and you'd go to the apple orchard and you'd pick the apples. They're a little smaller, but they're sweeter. I think they're just the way apples should be, the original kind of apples. It's such a great idea. Now, I should have said right up front, they don't deliver everywhere, so you need to go to imperfectfoods.com and see if they deliver in your area. One of the things they do, which is great, they deliver on the same day each week so that they can combine the truck runs. That, in by the way, saves emissions. In fact, this delivery weekly by neighborhood model produces 25 to 75% fewer emissions than individual trips to the grocery stores. So you're saving that way too. And the other thing, a lot of, I was worried about packaging. They take all the packaging back. They use a minimal amount of packaging. It's basically cardboard box. They don't put a lot of plastic bags in there or anything. And they take it all back and reuse it. So you never feel bad about packaging. No more packaging guilt. In fact, I think it's the only national grocery delivery company that makes it easy to return the packaging after every order. I am such a fan. Our day is Thursday, and we love Imperfect Foods. Save the environment. Get great food that would otherwise go to waste. You're doing a good thing for yourself and for the planet. Right now, you're also going to save 20% off your first four orders. Yeah, just go to imperfectfoods.com. Use the promo code TWIT. 20% off your first four orders. That's up to an $80 value at imperfectfoods.com. Use the promo code TWIT. We had Imperfect Foods broccoli just last night. So good. So green. So fresh. Join the movement. imperfectfoods.com, promo code TWIT. Forget your misconceptions. This is something you can do that gets you great groceries at a great price and helps the planet too. I love it. imperfectfoods.com. And don't forget that offer code, because that's how they know you saw it here, and that helps. imperfectfoods.com, promo code TWIT. imperfectfoods.com, promo code TWIT. I got my Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra. I like it a lot. I don't think the newest ones have this problem, but apparently Samsung shipped 100 million phones with broken encryption.
Ooh, that's a lot of phones.
That's a lot of phones.
A lot of phones.
This was something discovered by Tel Aviv University in Israel. The researchers wrote a paper called Trust. I love that. This, by the way, it's very competitive now in the security research field. You've just got to have a catchy thing. Trust dies in darkness. Shedding light on Samsung's Trust Zone Keymaster design. It'll be presented at USENIX this year. They rely on something called Trusted Execution Environment, which comes from ARM's Trust Zone technology. Basically, it's an isolated operating system, the Trust Zone operating system. But it's up to vendors to implement the crypto within the Trust Zone operating system. And apparently Samsung made a little mistake in the hardware abstraction layer. This is actually not at all uncommon. They used an imperfect random number generator. Samsung failed to implement Keymaster TA. TA is the trust abstraction, the trust architecture, properly in its Galaxy S9, S10, S8, S20, and even the S21 last year's. The researchers show how they could obtain keys from the hardware-protected blob. And again, it's not, this happens, and Steve talks about this all the time. Random number generators are not random. They're pseudo-random. And Matthew Green, who is our favorite crypto guy at Johns Hopkins, said that the unique number, which ensures that the AES encryption produces a different result every time, the SALT, they call it, needs to be unique. But if you reuse it, it's not unique. Green tweeted, so they could have derived a different key wrapping key for each key they protect, but instead, Samsung basically doesn't. They allow the app layer code to pick encryption IVs, which allows trivial decryption. IV is the initialization vector that initializes the random number. This is called an IV reuse attack. Just mentioning it. Not a problem with the latest Samsung devices. Samsung did not immediately respond to a request to confirm the researcher's estimate of affected devices and to estimate if how many devices, if any, remain unpatched. Basically, they had nothing to say. So maybe
nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Pay no attention. Honestly, you know, I mention it just to point out, it's very hard to do this right. It's easy to make a mistake in crypto. That's why you want to get it reviewed by crypto experts. And, you know, and it's good that there's a security community that bangs on this stuff. And I presume Samsung will fix this. It's an easy, it's a thing you can fix in software. But these things happen. And it's just something to be aware of. I don't think this attack is so easy to do that it's going to be a threat. We don't know of any in the wild exploits. Just raising awareness is all I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about the web. The James Webb Telescope. I bet you Georgia Dow's a James Webb nerd. I don't know why. I just feel like you might be.
We have a little telescope, so we do quite enjoy it. I'm not going to lie. And yes, I'm excited about the Webb Telescope, and I'm just so happy that it's working. And yeah,
that's the amazing
thing. It's just one of those fun things.
$10 billion.
So cool.
They've been working on this 20 years. It's finally, you know, at the Lagrange point, which is a million kilometers out, so far that it's going to be very hard if there's a problem to fix it. It had to be folded up like an origami project to fit in the nose cone so they could launch it. And then it had to perfectly go through hundreds of steps to unfold it without a flaw. It did. The mirror is 18 separate mirrors. They're hexagonal in an array, each of which can be controlled separately. So it's out there a million kilometers from Earth, and now the mirrors have to be adjusted. They move very, very, very slowly so that the images they're collecting can be converge on a single point, to focus it. They took, you probably saw it, we talked about it a few weeks ago, the first images came back, 18 separate images. Now they've been able to get it all to converge. They've successfully completed the image alignment. They are moments away. I think it's very soon that we're going to see the first perfect images from this most amazing telescope. All the images are in the same place. The goal now is to get those tiny little nanometer adjustments in order to get the final focus. Engineers have to image the spectra of light looking for slight shifts of the image locations at different wavelengths and then fine-tune it. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So good news. We are. John, wasn't it February 25th? Wasn't that the day they said we'd get our first images? I guess maybe they're a little bit behind. Maybe it's next month. Maybe it's March 25th. It's pretty soon. It's pretty soon. It's been an amazing story. Right. Because they have a sun shield, but it gets pretty hot out there. We've starting to see some reviews of the Steam Deck. We were talking about games. Steam. This is a year ago, right? I got in the pre-order. I haven't gotten an invite.
No, we haven't gotten our invite yet either.
Well, you and I may be glad.
Yeah, Leo's asking about it. I'm like, I don't know, bro. It might not work out for you.
from Sean Hollister on The Verge, Steam Deck review it's not ready. He says, both of these things are true. First, I'm having more fun with the Steam Deck than any gadget I've tested in years. Second, it's a mess. It's rushed, it's unfinished, it's buggy and unstable. If people sold it at Best Buy or GameStop, they'd be returning it in droves. But, of course, the people who are getting it are all people like you and me, Georgia, who can't wait. We're in on the beta. $400. Here's the good news, at least from my point of view. All of these games on this are, it's a Linux box. It's running Linux. So all of these games had to be rewritten to work with Linux. So it's been a great boon for Linux gaming. It's really good news for Linux gaming. I don't see Elden Ring on it. Probably won't. No. The fan apparently quite noisy, never stops whining, says Sean. There are still many games that don't work. And battery life, 2 hours at the highest fidelity. A little disappointing. Nevertheless, this, I still feel like there's a lot of promise here. I'm excited about it. You'd buy it, right, Georgia? Even with all the negative,
all the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll try it out. I'll see how it goes. Again, like, you know,
actually for $400, it's pretty amazing.
It's pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, again, I hope that they fix all the bugs and so it works really nicely. I'm not very tolerant of buggy hardware or software.
Well, and that's one of the kind of benefits of console gaming, right? Is that you just turn it on and it generally, unless it's Cyberpunk 2077, just works.
Especially with like most games, like my daughter is a PC gamer, like she's into Steam. Like she was like, oh, I want this thing. I'm like, let's wait and see. Somebody got to figure something out. But she's like, just the concept of being able to take the games to friends that don't have gaming PCs. She's like, I could get so many more people to play if I could just take it to them because I can't take my computer over people's house. I'm like, well, I should have got your laptop then if that's what you're thinking. You just want to go out and mobily play with people.
I think this is going to be better than a laptop, at least when it's finished.
Oh yeah, no doubt it's better than a laptop. I'm just saying, like, I didn't even think of wanting to just go and play games with kids like that. Like, I mean, like the Switch was that kind of thing where kids came together and partied together and played.
It's been fascinating watching the Switch take off like a virus among my daughter's elementary school cohort.
What do they play? Animal Crossing? What do they play? Or Zelda? Or
Minecraft.
Minecraft.
They do a lot of Minecraft.
Interesting.
They love making shared worlds and exploring them together and doing... they're aging out of the kind of really immersive, imaginative play that little kids do, but it's been interesting... watching how the girls, because I have a daughter, watching the girls bond over creating worlds and setting up rules for them and then having interactions with them and things like that. But in the course of, like, I would say 2 years, we went from no one in any of my kids' classes having a Switch to practically everybody. And now there are play dates that are set up where everybody brings over their Switch or they connect with each other in social spaces and do that. And the portability, I think, is what makes it easy because you're not tethered to a whole setup. You can just like pick up your little case and go and hang out with your friends and pop on. And it's just so easy to set up. I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
It's really a surprising form factor, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Switch. I love it. I play Animal Crossing. And I thought this was going to be kind of a Switch for grown-ups more.
Yeah.
Because it's a Windows or Linux machine, quad-core Zen 2 processor and 16 gigs of RAM. I mean, it's a pretty serious device. It's a 7-inch screen. It's not huge, but, I mean, it's bigger than you think. That's the size of the Switch. It looks like they wanted to make a Switch for AAA titles, kind of.
Yeah.
Although... the gaming on the Switch is pretty good, I have to say.
Yeah, I was interested in these D-pads. Like, I want to know how the functionality works, like what they're setting up, because everything about this seems great. They need to fix it. Fix it.
So, well, I'm also looking. This is the Ars Technica review. They agree software is very buggy. Sam Mishkovich, who's very good on this stuff, but he does say the hardware is good. And look, if it's just software, that's fixable. You know,
that's fixable.
That's totally fixable.
2 hours battery life for something mobile with a bright screen, playing intensive games. I live in a world where you got a little power bank. You'll charge it up. You'll sit in the
it's
world
not bad.
It's not bad.
I wouldn't expect, honestly, more than that. Although the Switch, what is your daughter's experience with the Switch. I don't play it long enough.
The Switch, like, because I've taken it sometimes to play it, like, you might get 3 hours out of it, depending on
what's not much better. Yeah.
But, like, if I'm playing, like, 2K or, like, Mortal Kombat or something intensive, you're getting, like, a little bit over two hours. Like, it's not 5-6 hours of playtime running on that thing.
Gaming is really interesting because, honestly, it's what drives a lot of technology. Mm-hmm. There isn't a whole lot of...
Entertainment always drives technology.
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. That is true, isn't it? But there's not a lot of software that challenges modern PCs, except games. You know, there's some pro stuff, you know, video editing and photo editing and stuff and rocket launching. But for most users, the games are the hardest challenge. They need the most hardware for games. And we love games. Games are bigger than ever. It's bigger than Hollywood. I think with VR coming and AR gaming and AR socializing coming... with the world going into hell in a handbasket, we're going to want to play more games.
It's a nice escape.
Yeah.
It's a nice escape. I have to say, it's a really fun, very cool experience where you can experience things that you would never be able to do in real life. So.
And I think a lot of the stigma, you don't hear as much Congress saying, oh, you know, or moms saying, oh, it's going to ruin your eyes or whatever it is. Mom used to say, get outside, get some fresh air. What are you going to do? Play games for a living? You don't hear that
because
as much
you
anymore.
Can.
Yeah, you can.
Some people are playing games for a living. Yeah, exactly, Lisa.
Yeah.
Well, I would also argue that you should look at gaming because that's going to be your next generation of user interfaces and software.
Right.
And Leo, I'm sure I've said this on your show before, but I feel like we're in the dying age of desktop computing, where the desktop is the primary metaphor for working. And you have now a cohort of people who are heading into the workplace who grew up on Minecraft and other really customizable environments. And I'm sure if you're in your 20s, you're like, what is this desktop and file system? What? Why? You know, why can't I create a space that works with the way my brain works and lets me organize information the way that's useful to me and, like, play the games now or just don't understand how things are going to look in 10 years, man?
I agree. I also wonder, you know, gaming used to be the toy store kind of the... You know, because it's now bigger than the movie industry, I think it's becoming a primary entertainment form. I also think because of esports, it's only a matter of time before it's also going to be a spectator sport. Yeah, the gaming is going to be
part of like a bigger shift towards more hands-on and active participation in entertainment. You think about even the way people watch TV these days, it's a multi-screen experience because they're tweeting their reactions or they're on like online fan communities, looking up references and parsing things out. And gaming is just, you're not just passively watching a narrative, you're changing the narrative.
Yeah.
You're participating in it directly. And that seems to be something that really resonates with a lot of people.
Well, and even if you're watching as a spectator, you end up playing it. I mean, I watched a bunch of Elden Ring videos because I thought this is too hard. And that made me want to play it more. It kind of goes hand in hand. Twitch is huge, isn't it? And YouTube gaming, Let's Play gaming, huge right now. And the creators are making many of them millions of dollars. I think it's the future of entertainment. So, and I think it's interesting that you're seeing new form factors. That's the other thing. You don't... This Steam Deck is a new form factor in the way you really don't see new PC form factors or new console form factors. So it's kind of interesting. I guess Nintendo gets credit, though, for starting this.
And I'm still going to shake my fist at the cloud like a grumpy old man. I mean, everything you guys said sounded great. Guess what? Nothing's hanging with this PC when it comes to me gaming. And my Nintendo Switch is great for like my fluff and portability. But those cartoon characters, I can't get better graphics by now. It's been 5 years, Nintendo, okay? Not everything has to be Zelda-like and fluffy, okay? I want some grit. I want some hardcore stuff in these games in this system, okay? What? Everything being 8-bit emoji is driving me crazy. The technology isn't moving forward. So you're talking about the future? The future ain't here yet, homie, okay? I'm down here running with the Thunder computer and the new M1 MacBook Pros. Hey, look, the power ain't there yet. The future is still far away.
You're just old school, Doctor. You're just an old man.
Hey, look.
look, I've been hearing about Lawnmower Man since the 70s, bro. I've been hearing about AR and VR
since the 70s. Wait a minute, you're sitting next to the queen of VR.
Owen, the metaverse is coming with the... I played Second Life, okay? I was making hotels and bars and clothes for people, making thousands of dollars off of people in 2005, 2007, okay? Oh, that, but now all of a sudden, we about to jump into the future.
Do you have, Owen, do you have any VR at home? Do you have any?
No, I don't. I don't have time to get nauseous yet, okay? It ain't work. Matter of fact, pump and brakes. Everybody out here about to empty their wallets in the next 24 hours, you're going to see some of the greatest trash you ever imagined. Samsung's making some dope stuff. Guess what? 3 months later, something better is coming out. Don't you buy one thing VR until Apple come out with their crap new glasses and then wait for the second iteration to spend the money because you have FOMO.
Oh, you don't want to get them this year. They're saying $3,500 for the first generation.
I just told you, the FOMO will have you spending and wasting this money. All you got to do is think about Lawnmower Man, okay? They've been preaching and selling. We got a good 4 or 5 years before I put these goggles on and start yakking all over my desk.
FOMO going to get you. What are you, you're HTC Vive, right, Georgia?
We have it all, but we have HTC Vive. And
is that your preferred?
I like the Vive better, yes.
I feel like the Oculus, though, is taking the world by storm. It was the number one app on Christmas Day, which means there were a lot.
It's the only thing left to buy for children. My kids got everything.
The Vive requires a heavy-duty PC. The Oculus... The Quest 2 just does standalone,
Can I buy my kids' goggles?
Really go ahead.
But nobody plays it. I got so many friends they bought for their kids for Christmas. I asked them like a week ago. I like, they haven't picked it up. First week, they were all drunk and running into TV.
It's not.
Insurance companies have gone up. Claims gone up 30%. Okay, because people are here punching TVs, jumping out of windows, and falling over their dogs. Okay, so just pump the brakes on all the VR stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Do you agree, Georgia? You don't agree. You think you
should I don't agree. Yeah. I do love it. I don't think it's ready. I think you're right. I think you're right, Owen. It's not ready yet, really, like for consumable. Like I think Oculus is, but then it's Facebook and you're tied to Facebook.
You know what I would pay to watch, Georgia? Why don't you have a YouTube channel of you in your costume with a headset playing a game? I would just watch that.
I did Sinuous Sacrifice in VR, which was really actually a really
if you
cool
sent me a sacrifice
therapist.
I did not get it. Did you send it to my email address?
It's on YouTube. I didn't send it to you, but I did it in VR.
Is there a game called Send You a Sacrifice? Is that what you're telling
me? Yes, it's Hellblade.
Oh, I thought you actually sent me a sacrifice.
I sacrificed. There was no one sacrificed for the making of this
when
video.
When did you send me that sacrifice? Because I don't remember getting it. This is a game called, thank you for clarifying,
yes.
Send You a Sacrifice.
And she goes through psychosis.
Oh, geez.
And she hears things and she sees things.
Wow.
And
I don't want to live through that. That doesn't sound...
In hearing it in VR and going through her journey in VR and hearing it all over around you, it was such an empathic experience for me as a therapist, but just for me to kind of understand someone else's journey. It was really kind of eerie and cool. I think that for some people it might be too intense because you really do feel like you are there. And I've had people describe how they would actually talk. Eventually they're talking to the voices back and just feels like it's a part of them. And I think that it helps some people go understand what someone that's dealing with psychosis is going through. And also to understand how you believe your world that you're in, because we only view the world through our own experience of that. And so what might seem like off to other people is just real and understandable to others. And so I think that it was a really neat experience.
So I have a close family member who's been through several psychotic breaks, hospitalized, that. And they've been trying to explain to me what it's like, and you can't understand.
You can't.
I've been on the outside watching, and it's horrific.
Yeah.
But you can't understand what was going on. And this person says it was very traumatic. They still live the trauma, the PTSD from it. So would you think this would be a good game to play just to kind of... how close is it? You've not been through psychosis, so you probably...
I haven't, but
one who's been through this would want to play this game because it would probably be very reactivating.
Some people have, and actually found that it was really a wonderful experience, and they loved the way that they showed it. And the makers of Hellblade, they really, like Ninja Theory, hired a psychiatrist
who
dealt with psychosis. They actually hired people that are going through psychosis.
This looks really beautiful. Psychosis, yeah.
To make sure that it was real and honest. And they had to do that balance of how far do they go so that they're not doing a disservice, but it's still an honest portrayal of what is it like to have to go through that.
It's not a shooter. You're not.
Third person. Like, you're kind of behind her.
Yeah. She looks like she's
like you're there.
A little crazy. Yeah.
This sounds like a cool game. Like,
she's a Celtic Pict. Okay. So, you're going through what she would go through, but that's also very accurate. They tried to make it as accurate as possible.
I'm going to have to play this game.
Also.
Wow, this really sounds.
It's a very cool game because it's a puzzle game. So you're in her world and she sees symbols, which is also something that some people with psychosis can go through.
Yes.
And you have to actually figure out, like, whatever, you're looking for the letter that looks like a letter M, and you have to kind of move the world so that you find an M. And so the tree plus this wall makes together a letter M. So there's part puzzle and then there's a part fighting game, and you go through her story. And through it, these voices are mostly kind of, saying mean things to you and putting doubt in your mind. And she's having to fight her internal battle that she's then expressing outwardly.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And I don't think that's a traditional game.
That's a really interesting idea.
I played a game like this like a long time ago. It was called Max Payne. They made a movie, a horrible movie out of it. But it was like this. And it is a creepy thing because he was going through like mental issues and demon spirits, whatever, his mind was talking to him, playing tricks on him, and you'd hear it. If you had surround sound, it would really freak you out because someone would be in your left ear telling you to do stuff, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And as you're playing the game at night, it would make me jump sometimes. So I'm like, whoa, what is, like, who is
I love
here?
And
having something in the
I
back
love
of your
that
mind.
Game. Yeah.
And this seems great. I almost make me want to put on some goggles.
PlayStation, or is this VR only, or?
No, this is actually a console game that then they ported down to VR. So I played it.
Better with VR or better with?
I have to say, the only thing is that if you get motion sickness, I did feel, and I don't usually get motion sickness in VR. I did feel it a little bit because I'm using the controller, so I'm not walking around the same way. I'm looking around, but it was really cool. If not, you would wear it with, a headset at the same time so that you can hear it in 3D. Really, really neat experience. And I think that experiential things like that, you can experience in a way that seems more real than you could. Like if you want to really experience what it's like to go into, an Egyptian tomb, like doing that in VR, like you get the scale, you can feel things, you can see them. And so it's a really neat experience. And I think that for this game, it was really cool. I'm happy that I did it in VR instead of just playing it on the computer.
S-E-N-U-A, not send you a sacrifice.
Not send you a
sacrifice.
Senua
sacrifice.
Senua sacrifice. And I think Ninja Theory did an amazing job of really caring about being able to show what people are dealing with psychosis and not falling into those old tropes of there's something wrong with her and she's crazy and she's scary and that means that she's dangerous. And I have to say I applaud them for being able to do that in a really respectful way.
It also raises some really interesting ideas about how a game can be an experience and can introduce you to the experiences of others by living their, walking a mile in their shoes, to use the cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I'm gonna have to try this.
Yeah, and definitely play it with a headset on if you're gonna do it, because it's a really eerie but a neat experience for most people, and for some people it might be a little bit too intense.
Yeah, well, that's
the intense moments in the game also.
Yeah. So you're saying do it in VR.
Yes, I would definitely try it in VR. But, grab some fresh ginger afterwards because you might feel motion sickness. You have to do it in like 45 minute stints. So
I will get nauseated if I spend too much time.
Depending on the type of game, especially.
Yeah, the movement. I mean, I got nauseated playing Halo because there was a lot of head bob or something. There was just something about it.
Yeah, well, you're moving, especially when you're going across the axis. And if when you zone, so I don't get it if I'm using teleport. But if I'm walking, I get much more motion sickness because what happens is that your brain is getting two different signals, right? Yeah. So like you're, because I, the tracking movement, you're kind of getting a different signal than actually walking. And so because of that, your brain and the horizon are different and your brain thinks that you're sick, like you've eaten some poison or there's something wrong. And so it wants you to throw up the poison, right? It's like right. an adaptive mechanism right. that is not really helpful if you're on a boat or if you're playing VR,
right.
our brains are not adapted to VR. And so because of that, you might feel some motion sickness.
You know, funny. I have to stand up and play. Like if I sit down and play, I get nauseous. Like if I'm standing
yes,
up.
Yes, exactly.
And like,
exactly.
And with my arms, like, I feel like I play it just fine. But like if mm-hmm. you sit down and try to get comfortable for me, mm-hmm. it just throws me all off. And I'm like, what am I doing
exactly.
in here?
Exactly.
It's such a weird, like I said, we're not at peak, you know, plugging my brain technology, but we'll get there one day.
You know, I might try this on this is the compromise. I have a big screen, 55-inch OLED gaming screen. If I sit close enough to it, it's almost immersive. I might try it that
yeah.
way.
Yeah. Well, as long as you have a headset on, I think that you'll still feel...
You mean headphones?
It's quite... headphones on. Yeah, sorry, yeah, yes. yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that it's quite immersive. It's not as much in the world. Because like there's a scene where she comes up and she's looking at you and it's kind of like this out of world feeling in VR and she goes to like touch your cheek.
Ooh.
And it was really this strong emotional moment and the voices. And then she kind of like touches you. And I like, it did kind of bring me back. Like that was like a really interesting experience for it. And that you wouldn't get, but you would get it for what it would be like to hear voices that are around you and in your head and you can't get out of it.
Are there other, Ninja Theory's other games like this, or is this kind of an outlier and the other games are just traditional combat?
Yeah, the other games are traditional games that they have, but they're coming up with a second Senua's Sacrifice. So
I wonder how well it did.
I did do well. They're coming out with a second one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's quite a popular game.
Yeah. Interesting. I love...
And it's beautiful.
Yeah. I love seeing stuff like this because it's a unique way of thinking about gaming. I don't think... You know, I'm done with first-person shooters. They're just so violent. And I want to try some other things that are as engaging and as fun. You know, that's hard to do. Fun. That's why I want to kill monsters in the Elden Ring.
Yeah.
No, it's not why. Okay. You don't play any games, do you, Lisa? I see you looking at us, rolling your eyes, saying, go outside, get some fresh air.
I didn't roll my eyes. It's like listening to people talk about, say, geology, where I'm like, I love that you love rocks and you're able to use them to like date the crust of the planet. But I can't tell my schist from my feldspar.
Yeah. So. You know, that's a common problem. Yeah.
And it's the same thing with gaming where, oh my God, I just realized instead of sitting straight on.
I love it. You're suddenly
it looks
glowing.
Like you've become an angel. Oh. She should have the wings.
Get her the wings. Yeah.
I'm going to send but Lisa the wings.
Yeah. But with gaming, what I really love is hearing about how people get so engaged in it.
Yes.
And, everything from the intimate biological experience to the emotional engagement to your technological setup. It's fascinating. And it's something where I'm like, I love that you love that for you. Good for you.
You know, I feel the same way. If I can see somebody's passion for something, even if I don't get it, I get it in that sense. Yeah. Although gaming... I get it because I like gaming. Yeah.
I'm holding out hope that I'll find a gaming experience that clicks because, you know, I'd say, for example, I used to joke in the early 2000s that I just didn't get the point to radio. And then I was in a job situation where I was commuting. I was like, radio.
Broadcast radio? You don't get the point of broadcast radio?
Well, no, I was going to say, Leah, this is my conversion
You're
story.
You're going to break my heart.
No, this is my conversion story because I was like, what is the point? We can read it on the web or we can read it, period, or there's video. And then I was in a job situation where I had to commute for like 90 minutes each way every day. And I got like, And so I was listening to KQED and like all of a sudden after like a month, you begin to recognize the conventions of narrative reporting through NPR or California Report or Marketplace. And
I began to really like start admiring the music selections and how they move your mood and how efficiently information is imparted. I'm like, oh, I get radio now. I get the allure. I get it. And I'm sure that's going to happen with a game for me at some point. It hasn't yet, but I'm open to the possibility and I hope I get there.
All right. When we come back, we're going to take a break. I want Owen and Georgia to make some recommendations for Lisa for a game that would grab her and get her into gaming. And so we can convert this person who is already walking into the light and get her all the way in.
I can make one for you right now, Uncle Leo.
Hold on. Are you going to tell me ExpressVPN?
I'm going to tell you to use my VPN.
I can tell. I can see that.
My VPN.
His VPN, my VPN, ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like leaving your keys in the car while you're running to the gas station for a snack. You know, most of the time you come back, your car's there. Sometimes you come back and there's a guy driving off in your car. You got to protect yourself every time you connect to an open network, an unencrypted network, cafes, hotels, airports. Anybody on that network can access your personal data. Your financial details, your passwords. Worse, they could do things like impersonate your home Wi-Fi access point so that your laptop goes, oh, we're home, and joins it, and then you're on their network, baby. It doesn't take a lot of technical knowledge, just some cheap hardware. A smart 12-year-old could do it. And, of course, you know, when you think about what they would do with that, they can make, you know, thousands of dollars selling your personal info. They can make your life miserable. You need a VPN. There's so many good reasons to protect your privacy, to protect your security, to surf the internet in various places around the world so that you eliminate geographic restrictions on content. ExpressVPN is an encrypted tunnel. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that hackers can't steal your sensitive data. They can't see your sensitive data. They can't even see that it's you. They just see gobbledygook flying through the air. It would take, because it's using strong encryption, it would take a hacker with a supercomputer more than a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. Until there's a hacker at the Starbucks using a quantum computer, I think we're okay. Fire up the app, click a button, and you're protected. That's the other thing I love about ExpressVPN. 94 countries, 160 locations. They devote money to bandwidth, so it's very fast enough to watch HD video. You'll never complain. In fact, you could put ExpressVPN on everything, phones, laptops, smart TVs. You can even put it on your router. And when you put it on your router, it's amazing because your whole family, your whole house is protected. But I can guarantee you this, no one's going to say, what happened to the internet? It's so slow. It's the same. They don't even know, but they're safe. They're secure. I love that. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/twit. When you go there, there's a list of the routers it works with, a list of the devices, Android, iOS, Windows, Mac, Linux, expressvpn.com/twit, expressvpn.com/twit. When you buy a one-year package, you get 3 months free. That's your best deal. Brings it down to below $7 a month. You want to pay for a VPN. You got to trust me. You do not want them to make money off of you. You want to be the customer, not the product. And you want them to invest in their networks. You want them to rotate your IP addresses. All of these make a VPN work better. ExpressVPN does all of that. And they are independently audited on a regular basis to make sure that they do exactly what they say, to verify their privacy policy, to verify this amazing trusted server technology. There was a great write-up the other day on Bleeping Computer about ExpressVPN. And actually, I've been using ExpressVPN for years. I didn't even know this, how they work with this trusted server technology. The article was because ExpressVPN has a bug bounty of $100,000 to the first person who can hack its servers. But in the article itself, they talked about how hard this is going to be. ExpressVPN's trusted server, custom-built operating system based on Debian Linux, featuring proprietary security enhancements designed for VPN infrastructure. It's RAM only. They periodically wipe the entire system every reboot. The whole thing starts over. So no logging, no record of your visit. The system has built-in verification that prevents insider code tampering events. It's patched every week with clean installations on every server. How about that? So good luck. The bug bounty's been going for 6 years, $100,000. No one's collected it yet. This is the one to use. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech.
It's so good you forget I have it on, honestly.
That's the key, right?
I've had it for like the last 4 or 5 years, I got it on all my devices. It legit, like, you need a VPN. It's a great VPN, and the price is right. Price is right.
Yeah, baby. So iOS 15.4, which is currently very close. I think it's going to ship. Well, so actually, let's do a whole Apple thing, because there's a whole bunch of Apple news, but it's all somewhat speculative. I think 15.4 will come out March 8th, a week from Tuesday. The rumor is that's when Apple will have an event. They'll announce their new iPhone SE with 5G. They'll announce a new iPad Air. iOS 15.4 will come out. I'm hoping a Mac Mini will come out. But there will be a new voice on 15.4. I think this is great. I've often wondered why it's a female voice on these voice assistants. I don't like that. Apple has given us some choices. They are introducing a new voice that is, in fact, not gendered at all. Brilliant. About time. Apple says they hired somebody from the LGBTQ plus community to record this. Let me see if I can. I'm trying to find an example of it. If you have 15.4, you've heard it, and I have not heard it yet. And I wanted to see if I, but I don't think anybody has the sample of it. Gender neutral voice option. Let me see if CNET has it. Nope, nobody. Darn it. I was hoping. Yeah, it's Pat. Somebody said, is it Pat? Yeah, it's Pat. Could be a guy, could be a gal. We don't know him. We don't care. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a good thing, Lisa? Why should it be a female voice or even a male voice? It's a robot. It's not a person.
I always reset my Siri to a British male voice anyway. It makes me think of Jarvis from Iron Man, and I like that. I think that launching Siri as female, along with, and I believe Google Assistant's inaugural voice defaulted to female.
Right.
I think it said a lot about some of the baked-in cultural assumptions that the people developing these assistants had and chose
exactly.
not to examine.
Yes.
The fact that they defaulted to, we're going to make this assistant, we're going to have it present as female, and we think it's perfectly natural to have a female presenting technology subordinate to your desires and wishes and making your life easier. I think that says a whole lot more about the culture inside tech companies and the culture inside development teams than perhaps they would like to admit.
I use Voice 3, and I didn't know this. I just thought it sounded jaunty. It turns out Apple, mm-hmm. when they added these two new voices, went to mm-hmm. black voice actors.
Yeah, yeah.
Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
I didn't think it's a black voice. I just thought it's a jaunty voice.
Hi, I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
And when he says, okay.
It's like the Jake from Steak Farm guy.
It is. It's like the Jake. Maybe it is. We don't know, because they never tell you who it is. But it's, and when you ask him to do something, he says, okay. It's like he's very cheerful.
Yeah.
So here's the, I found it. This is from Macworld. This is very brief, but a little snippet of how the new voice sounds.
Hi, I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
Wow.
Hi, I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
Sounds like an elf.
So here's why I like it, is it sounds not human.
It doesn't sound human,
and
which I like.
I like that because, first of all, it's a nice way to sidestep all of the weird
it's
and
not a human.
Baggage.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. A human recorded and second it, but all, it's a robot. You're talking to a robot.
It helps you remember that it's a piece of assistive technology that augments the human sphere.
Do you encourage your daughter to treat Siri like a human or like a robot?
So what I've tried to do is model how you should talk to Siri and Google Assistant with things like, Siri, could you please set a timer for 10 minutes? Or if Siri answers a query for us in the car, I'll say, thank you, Siri.
So you're polite. You say please and thank you.
Well, yes, yes. And also because these are... with all your social interactions, you should be trying this, right? That said, one of the things that I thought
was... But it's not a human.
Well, it doesn't matter that it's not a human. You're having discourse with it.
Are you?
And if you want to...
When I type a command on the command line, when I say sudo apt get, I don't say please.
Well, here's the thing. That's you in the text, and that's a little bubble inside your head. There's no other interaction involved. But if you're modeling a conversation, and not all conversations have to be like the one we're having now, where we're striving to exchange ideas and come to a common understanding. Sometimes it's just an information exchange. And if you have those, and you do have those information exchanges with people, so why wouldn't you model the kind of behavior that you hope somebody applies to a person-to-person information
exchange? Develop good habits.
Person to technology.
Develop good habits. Exactly. Because it's a habit.
It's the same. Yeah, it's the same way you always drink 8 glasses of water, or you make sure you always have protein with your meal, you know, things like that. It's just another good habit.
But you did point out that the good thing about this voice...
I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
This doesn't sound human. It kind of reminds you it's not a human.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's the argument against saying the kids treat it like a human.
No, I don't think there's ever a bad time to model courtesy. Not to animals, not in any sort of exchange
of
information.
Be nice to the robots. They deserve it.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's a really good short story. I can't remember if I found the link off Boing Boing, but the premise was that in the short story, there was a guy who actually really enjoyed being verbally abusive to his AI assistant, you know, setting it up to present as female and being abusive with it. And then the AI was like, oh, is this how we're playing? I'll show you.
That's Scarlett Johansson in a nutshell. I got to tell you.
No, but so there was a little bit of that where I'm like, okay, eventually the technology is going to get to the point where it's going to either reward you for interactions or it's going to deter them. Like,
the robots will remember, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm not saying they'll remember on their own. I'm going to say somebody's going to find a way
to get you back.
Well, yeah, because they're going to be like, this is behavior modification, or this is behavior incentivization.
Georgia, where do you come down on this?
Well, I think it's just a good habit. They're not human, and that's fine. But I think that if you want to model behavior, it's so close. Our brain does not know the difference between conversation with a human and not with a human, because that's not the way that, like, our brains have not changed almost at all in 150,000 years. So if you want your children to practice being polite, and since they're interacting so much with technology, they should be a polite across every single scale of conversation. So that when they feel frustrated and upset, which, you know, since I'm interacting with Siri is a lot of the time, they can do that and deal with that frustration and still be polite instead of wanting to say
Siri,
the things that
you're a diphead. Please.
In my head, I say horrible things to Siri.
In my head,
I
say
not to say outwardly horrible things to Siri.
I swear it's Siri
but
all
like,
the time.
And it's great. I think that it's wonderful to have different choices of voices. I think that being represented, is really important. And I think that the fact that, I think that matters a lot, that Siri still doesn't understand like intonation, that if I'm whispering, don't shout back at me. You know, that might be
actually,
like a really good idea.
Who is it? Echo now that does that? If you whispered Echo, it whispers back. It has
like,
a bedtime
thank you,
voice.
Or don't say anything at all. I don't need you to tell me, yes, shut off all the lights.
Honestly, I don't want them to be more human. I want them to be more robotic. That's why I like this voice, because I don't want them. I want it to be clear.
I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
Sounds like we represent the
Lollipop
League.
I don't know. I think that one eventually.
So what I think is really interesting is my daughter will pit Google Assistant and Siri against each other, where she'll ask them both the
same question. She knows.
Well, she'll ask them both the question and she'll see how they answer it. And I find it really interesting that she's always testing to see which assistant is more useful and legitimate to her needs. Like, there's just some sort of techno skepticism that she seems. Yeah. I don't know where she got it from, but I'm glad she's got it.
I like it. No, that's good. My kids are old enough. I didn't have to teach them this. Thank God. Mm-hmm. This didn't come up. Oh, and you're raising a ninja. Do you tell your ninja to treat Siri like a lady or kick her in the butt?
Lisa's got me all. I got to go sit down with Georgia and think about my mindset. First of all, in my mindset, I was thinking the reason it's a female voice is because
women should be running the planet because men screw up everything, and nobody wants to hear somebody man explaining to me how they didn't turn off the lights.
I don't know if it's apocryphal.
Mansplaining would be the worst.
Parenthetically, Air Force for years has used female voices in the heads up displays. Pull up, pull up, pull up, because they thought men listen to their mothers,
and if they're
blacking out, they're redding out. If they hear their mom saying, pull up, pull up.
Oh, my God, it's mom's computing from Futurama.
From all the things, positive and negative, women can motivate men and generally anyone to do anything. So that's where I thought it was from. Now I'm thinking to myself, am I in the patriarchy of men?
Arnold Schwarzenegger told me, pull up, I would pull up.
Secondly, the other issue is, you know what? I've cussed out my GPS, my PlayStation, my computer, my Google, my everything. It's a robot. I'm not saying please or thank you.
I agree.
Especially, I run this city up here. And that little voice is annoying. It's not even a robot voice. If you want to give me a robot voice, give me a real... There's plenty of examples in movies of a robotic voice.
I would like a robot voice.
You want it to be like Hal?
Yeah.
That would make me listen.
Pull up.
if you want to get ambiguous, that's what I need. That's the voice I need. Otherwise, you just keep the women telling me what to do because I like listening to women. It's just me. It's got to pay attention. If a dude tell me to do something like this, I don't need nobody's mansplaining to me. I'm the one mansplaining to everybody else. I ain't got time to listen to somebody tell me what to do with myself.
What does Bender's voice sound like? John DiMaggio. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Let me play a little bit.
He sounds like a person because I've heard him character act in something else. I instantly know who that is when I hear him.
Hey, everybody. I'm John DiMaggio. You may know me as the voice of Bender. You know, the lovable Skip from Futurama.
He sounds like a human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, he sounds like kind of a lovable scamp.
See, I'd want GLaDOS. If I could choose, I'd choose GLaDOS. Like, let's do this.
I used to have my Tom Tom, because you could do celebrity voices, used to have the GLaDOS voice. Nice. And she would lie to you. She would say, it was not a good choice.
No, really?
Yeah, she would say, turn left here when you're supposed to turn right.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Here's GLaDOS from the game Portal. She's, by the way, great game coming back. Portal is now, I think it's now on the Switch.
Oh, it's you. It's been a long time. How have you been? I've been really busy.
So they do some auto-tune stuff with that, right?
Yeah.
That's good. I would like GLaDOS to be my Echo or Siri. I would like that. That's how a robot should sound. And then you could swear at it.
Well, I paid for Samuel L. Jackson. I paid him a $2.99.
Yeah.
And he was cussing all the live long day. It was great. I just wake
ask
up
him, cussing ask at each other. Ask him, say, Samuel, why do you cuss so much?
And then stand back, by the way. I don't know if it was like a gag, but when I had other people come over, I would tell them, hey, I got Samuel Jackson. Watch this. And he would never curse when other people were there.
Oh, he was shy.
I'm like, what is going on? People thought I was literally 20 people I was trying to tell. I was calling people on the phone, like, listen to this. And he would, I don't know what it knew, but it knew that I was trying to show off. And he would not cuss when somebody else was present. It drove me crazy. I deactivated him. I want my $2.99 back. I want it back.
I have a message for you from GLaDOS. Here, let me see if I can get her.
Oh, you could type in what you wanted to say? Oh.
Yeah, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's so many people. Here we go. You ready? Oh, no, it's still thinking. There's so many people playing it. It takes a minute and a half to process it. This is a GLaDOS voice generator, glados.c-net.org, based on text clips. And I wrote something in. We'll edit it into the show later.
It'll seem like it happened immediately.
It'll be incredible. They're right.
You'll laugh, you'll be like, I know the truth.
It's like a minute and a half to do this, I guess. And now that I've mentioned it on the air, it's never going to work. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Samuel Jackson. See, I told you, they know.
There is nothing like a human voice for some things. Like, for instance, audible.com. I want a human voice to read to me, right? But I don't want a human voice on my Amazon Echo or my Siri. I like the idea of it sounding like a robot, because I think it's important to teach kids yes, you want to get them in the habit of please and thank you. That's important. I had a guy call me the other day, call me sir on the radio show. Sir, sir, sir. I said, are you in the military? He said, no, I'm just polite. But in fact, Aunt Pruitt will call people Mr. and Miss and all that. I like that. I think it's a Southern thing. But
it's the self.
But you got to know the difference between a human and a robot. And I think the other thing kids need to learn is these are not humans. It might feel like it. You might emotionally. I worry about a kid getting, I know intellectually they know, but I worry about them getting some sort of emotional sense that I'm interacting. It's easy to get in that, I think. And I think it's important that they know the distinction.
Have you ever watched the movie Her?
Yes.
Yeah.
He fell in love with her.
He fell in love with her.
Yes.
That is the future. That's what's coming down the pipeline with all this AI and natural reaction and expression and wanting to have things feel more natural. Like that AI robot they have that people say they freaked out.
He fell in love with her, right?
Yeah, he fell in love mm-hmm. with her.
One of the emerging areas of research in call centers is how to get AIs that can read sentiment and respond to both small talk and profanity.
Yes.
Well, the idea is that if you get the AIs that read, what you can do is you can actually move the customers to more effective person-to-person interactions later so that an agent is like, okay, watching, this guy's coming in hot or what have you. But I find it so interesting that we're going to have basically the suite of technical tools that's going to try to meet people where they are emotionally and then move them to a different place emotionally in the service of a customer
that's
transaction.
That's so manipulative.
It's so wild that this is what people want to do with the technology.
Here's GLaDOS. Yeah. Let's see if I can get it.
But when you're crazy, we only cuss when you're in the room.
That's sort of GLaDOS-y. By the way, I should have never mentioned it. And then there's hundreds of people using it. and it's never going to work for any of them. I'm sorry. All right, let's take a break because I mentioned Audible and I should probably talk about them. They are our sponsor for this segment. And I tell you what, I have a Kindle that will read by a robotic voice, will interpret the text. I have lots of ways to do that. They're getting better and better, but there is nothing like a real reader. And that's what Audible is all about. Audiobooks performed, not read, performed by some of the best performers in the world. In fact, when you get a celebrity audiobook, a biography or autobiography, often they'll read it. Steve Martin reading Born Standing Up. It's like he's in the room. It's fantastic. Get experts talking to you like they're in the room. Audible has more than just audiobooks, more than just celebrity memoirs. They've got mysteries and thrillers. They've got self-help, motivation, wellness. They've got business. They've got podcasts, thousands of them from popular favorites plus exclusive news series. And as a member, you get full access to their growing selection of included audiobooks that you can download or stream all you want. We were watching The Gilded Age, and I thought, I have a craving for one of those great kind of Gilded Era 1910 novels by Edith Wharton. I downloaded The House of Mirth. Beautiful reader, famous British actress. Can't remember her name right now. But it was part of my Audible subscription. I didn't even have to pay for it. It was so fantastic. I just love that. A full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks that you can download or stream all you want. Audible gives members a chance to listen to and discover new favorites and explore different formats. And that's part of what makes your membership so much more valuable. Things like the exclusive Words Plus Music series, or maybe a podcast you never thought of or considered before, theatrical performances. You could go to Broadway. And as an Audible member, you could choose a title a month that you get to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Let me show you the one I listened to. This is so good. The House of Mirth, Eleanor Braun. That's who it is. Edith Wharton's, and she, listen to her. She's so beautiful. This is so good.
Selden paused in surprise. In the afternoon rush of the Grand Central Station, his eyes had been refreshed by the sight of Miss Lily Bart.
Oh, Lily Bart. Cost me nothing. It was included in my Audible membership. Audible Studios did this one. Oh, if you like that, the Gilded Age on HBO, this is even better. I just got the Babaverse. Steve Gibson's been raving. Have you guys read any of the Babaverse? He's been raving about it. Let me play a little bit of that. That's the other thing. Look, I'm streaming. You can stream from your browser.
Here, I'll play a sample. There we go.
Good. You're awake. I tried to respond, but what came out was something like a cross between a cough and static.
Recognize that voice? Do you know Ray Porter's voice? I know you do, because he does Project Hail Mary, the latest Andy Weir audiobook. I just love Ray Porter. He does all the Babaverse as well. 2022, big for Audible. They're celebrating our newfound self-awareness and making positive change. Audible helps make space for what matters to you. It's a destination for your wellness, whether you're looking to soul search, be inspired, work toward new goals, unwind, or simply be entertained. We've had some time in the last couple of years to figure out what truly makes us happy. I'll tell you what, I couldn't have survived pandemic without Audible. And believe me, going into the future, Audible will always be my companion. You can always find the best of what you love or something new to discover. New members, try Audible. I don't know if there could possibly be anybody who listens to this show who is not yet a member, but if you're one of them, try it free for 30 days. Download the Audible app. Get started with your free trial. Audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. AUDIBLE.com/twit or text twit to 500-500 to start your free trial today. Thank you, Audible, for keeping me company for the last few years with the best audiobooks. Oh, I forgot. We have a promo. We don't like to call them promos. We like to call them mini movies, recapping some of the things you may have missed this week on Twit.
I wanted to hang out with Mr. Owen J.J. Stone, also known as O Doctor, also known as Pain in My Neck.
Cut the wrong mic.
He cut the wrong mic. See, thank you for coming to the AMA, Twit AMA, run by Owen J.J. Stone, a.k.a. O Doctor. Oh, he's shaking his head. I can't hear him. Sorry, your mic's cut.
Previously on
Did you
Twit.
Take over?
Security Now.
What I do.
We consider the implications of the technology behind last week's denial of service attacks on some of Ukraine's critical infrastructure. What the world saw a week ago in Ukraine was an HTTPS query-capable botnet flexing its muscles.
Tech News Weekly.
I want to talk about Amazon's Astro Home robot.
I found two people in the world with the Astro, contacted both of them. Only got one reply. Only two people posting about a $1,000 device. It means there's very few in the world. And to be honest with you, I believe there's between 50 and 100 in the wild.
Windows Weekly.
So when you flash forward to Windows 11, they're saying, hey, look, we're going to let you install Windows 11. We get it. Now, we may at some point stop delivering security updates, right? There's no promises, but we're going to let you do this for now. They're going to put a watermark on your desktop telling you that this computer is not supported. Like, why? What is
Twit?
Or you put a note on your screen over the watermark.
Yep.
If it really bothers you that much, I know.
Wait a minute. Was that my Bitcoin password that I saw there? If you missed anything this week, we had a lot of fun. And again, Owen, you were great in the Ask Me Anything. Paul Thurrott himself will be coming up next month. Ann Pruitt's doing a great job putting together some fun stuff for our
He's making himself useful.
He's making himself useful. What is, by the way, what is the microphone you're using these days, Owen? That's a different looking mic. What is that?
I switched up.
It sounds good.
I usually use these, but I just shot a new Raising a Ninja today, and my daughter started a podcast, so I switched it up. This is the little Pod Rode mic thing, the little tiny one.
But the big one's a Rode as well, right?
Yeah, they're all Rodes.
They're both Rodes.
Yeah, and my other mic is an AKG. I'm like you. I got too much stuff, so every once in a while I like to switch it up, give my voice a little bit more depth.
Yeah.
Check it out, see if something different works better for me.
Yes. You know what I mean? So, okay.
That's what I do.
All right.
And look at this. Look at this. You know what this is?
Is that Georgia?
So cute.
It's Turbo Man.
Turbo Man?
Turbo Man.
Who's Turbo Man?
You don't know about Turbo Man? You were talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger earlier. Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie where they were trying to get the Turbo Man doll. What was it called? The Christmas movie. Everybody's trying to get a Turbo Man. Dang it. Can't remember.
All the Way? Is that it?
That sounds about right. They were trying to get the toy. That's the toy everybody's trying to get.
You know, I finally understand what it means to get old. the young people around you will be talking about things you have. You just go, I don't know what you're.
Well, that you live in a whole different hyperspace. You and Tom Merritt get on my nerves anyway. Somebody asked you about a diode from 1983.
That I know about. I can tell you. I can tell the shiz from the feldspar.
Exactly.
I know the difference.
Just pump your brakes on what you do and don't know. Your brain's kind of full of somewhat useful information.
I loved that when you said that, by the way, Lisa, because my father was a geologist. And you bet I could tell the schist from the feldspar.
He knows.
On site.
I feel like it's the Miss Othmore part of the brain, because I went on a boat tour in Crater Lake. We went to Crater Lake National Park. You go on the boat tour, you see the log that's been floating there for years. And the park ranger who did our boat
tour.
Wait a minute.
They give you a tour of a log that's been floating in the lake?
The log is like a feature. You basically go in the middle of Crater Lake to look around and be amazed at this volcanic caldera that you're in.
Yeah, feature is the log floating?
Yes. Yes, it's called the Old Man. And the reason it's a big deal is Crater Lake is so cold. It's just a few degrees above freezing. And because it doesn't have any water source that flows in or flows out,
it's like a giant ice cube.
Yes. And so this log has been bobbing around in the lake for decades upon decades. I forget exactly how long. I'm going to have to Google that one.
Here's a picture. The Old Man of the Lake. Mm-hmm. So it's floating. That's not like a pier. That's just a floating piece of wood.
It's a floating. It floats vertically. That's it. Yes.
How has a giant hemlock managed to float upright in Crater Lake for more than 100 years? Man, if that's
because the water is bloody cold, is what it is. And the ranger who was leading us around the boat happened to have a PhD in geology, and so he's completely nerding out, explaining to us, "Oh, and this happened when the dinosaurs were walking the earth, and people were just." The thing is, he's dropping all of these technical terms, and I was like, how lucky we are, and I won't remember any of this because it just...
Nope. There's not enough room.
I don't know my...
Not enough room in the head.
Not enough room in the brain anymore. Nope. I don't know...
One thing goes in, something goes out, and you
like
just...
Paleozoic, Mesozoic.
Don't need it. Don't need it. Yep. Cretaceous. Oh, I know.
Exactly.
I know all of
this. You know, there's the Silurian period, Cambrian. And the Ordovician period, and the Cambrian period, and they all just kind of jumbled together. And so I'm like, okay, we can look at rocks and figure out how old things are, and that's great. That's just going to be a skill set I don't have.
Well, there's Mount Mazama. Is this also a crater? John's a big fan of craters.
Yeah.
That's the volcano.
Yes.
That blew up in Oregon and made Crater Lake. And maybe the Old Man of the lake was in that volcano. We don't know.
I think that's hysterical. It's fascinating.
Does the ranger understand the kind of the irony of the fact that you're going in a boat in this lake, and he says, and there's the Old Man of the lake, a log that's been floating here for 100 years. Does he understand the irony of that, or does he just do it straight?
He does it straight. They have their work cut out for them because they have to remind you repeatedly, please don't go into the lake. It's almost freezing.
Is it that cold? Wow. No water in or out. Why does it not just evaporate?
I don't remember.
Maybe there's ice. Maybe there's melt.
Yeah.
Oh, rain. They have rain up there. Okay. There you go.
And it snows. The photos that come out of Crater Lake National Park in the winter are amazing.
Never been there. I can't wait. Now I've got to go see the Old Man of the lake.
Yeah, just get yourself on the boat tour. You'll go buy it. You'll be tempted to try to reach out your arm and touch it, and they'll be like, "No, don't."
Oh, they get mad if you try to touch it. Well, it'd be really embarrassing if you touched it and it sank. It'd be like
you or if
broke.
You fall in and you're holding
you
on to it. They're like, "No,
the lake.
You ruined it. Well, it was you.
Perfectly vertical. It is phenomenal."
Straight to jail.
Straight to jail. What are you in for, man? I committed murder.
I sank the Old Man of the lake.
What?
I caused it to float horizontally. I tilted it over.
Oh, boy. Well, we've actually run out of... This has never happened before. We've run out of stories before we ran out of show. So I stalled for as long as I could, but I just couldn't keep it going. I guess I have to take off my clothes. I don't know. No, I wouldn't do that.
You're already streaked.
That would be terrible.
You mean you wouldn't do that again?
Once is enough.
Oh, I believe you guys were supposed to give me gaming recommendations.
Ah, I knew there was something we were coming back to do. So we want to get Lisa into gaming. I personally, I'm a big fan of Valheim. It's about building. It's about being a Viking. It's beautiful sunsets. It's occasional attacks from strange things. But most of the time, you're just hanging, chilling with the Vikings. My favorite. What do you recommend to get Lisa into games?
A brutal exploration and survival game, I'm told.
It's not that brutal. It's not. It's not. That's a
procedurally generated purgatory. What does procedurally generated mean? It means
it's different every time, and so there's different seeds. You can. The best thing, though, is to get a group of like Girl Scouts together, in a server, and all play cooperatively. And you can honestly do more build. It's more like Minecraft than it is like Call of Duty. It's a beautiful game. I really like.
Yeah, I don't want to shoot 'em up game.
I don't want to either.
And hostile.
That's why I should also recommend Wordle.
Wait, the one that just got bought by New York Times.
Sometimes that could be dramatic. Lisa and I. It is our new nighttime. My Lisa, not Lisa Schmeiser.
Yeah, not me. Yes.
I don't know her that way. It's our new nighttime ritual. Before we turn out the lights and go to sleep, we do the Wordle. It's really fun. It's kind of nice.
I've never done Wordle. I will never do Wordle.
Never?
Life.
Oh. I tried it too, and it was not for me. I'm dyslexic, so like I did not find that fun.
So what do you recommend for Lisa? What do you want to get?
It depends on what you really enjoy. Like, gaming, it should be towards something that you already enjoy doing. So, like, for me, it's just stress relief. Like, I want something kind of mindless. I can come in, I can come out, I don't have to worry. I get a little bit of dopamine from, like, whatever.
I'm with you.
Candy Crush game or doing a puzzle solver, like The Room, where you're in a area and you have to find the clues and put them away.
Yeah.
It's just a really fun, beautiful, easy to start and end game, or all, like, play people against Boggle. Like, I like quick and easy games, like those really long, expansive games. Like I don't have the time to be able to go through it. And Lisa, it seems like you're doing like a million different things. So I don't think that you'd have a lot of time to be able to do a game that you're going to have to spend a lot of effort in doing. So I would say something that's more kind of like a casual, you know, something that's good for your brain, and you're doing like whatever, words with friends or other things where you can kind of have a little cute little competition going, but it isn't something that's really serious or that's going to take up a lot of time.
Okay, good idea. Yeah. Okay. Casual gaming, iPad, iPhone style. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
And it keeps your brain active.
Owen, what do you think?
As usual, Lisa, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm the person that comes in with the correct answer for you. Okay.
I love it. He did his doctor voice. He's doing his doctor voice.
Doing the doctor. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Your children have Nintendo Switches. The first thing, Mario Kart. Okay. Oh, I'm sure you drive a vehicle.
Yes.
I'm sure that a little bit of competition will get the blood going. And when you shoot a turtle at a kid and they scream and cry when they're about to make first place and you take them out, there's no greater joy. I know you said you don't want violence, but when you punk one of
it's
these
not violent, it's just a turtle. Yeah.
Oh no, it's not violent till the kids get upset, and that's the kind of violence I enjoy. Making children sad when you hit them with a little a turtle, or you drop a banana peel in their face. Mario Kart.
Earlier in the show, you were talking about how it's important for their sense of achievement to finally beat you. So what I'm hearing is to be a good parent, first, I have to beat them.
Exactly. I mean, and hey. You're a rookie, so you're going to take some L's at first. That's when you got to level up your game and be consistent. You know, 2 or 3 races a week, maybe play at night when the kids go to bed. One game only take you 4 minutes. Next thing I know, 2 months later, you're going to be telling me I'm running these kids into the dirt. Oh, doctor, and that's where you get started at. And then you can move into, once you get addicted, because you're going to get addicted, that's when you move into Animal Crossings. You're a mother, you take care of a lovely home, you go ahead and take care of a fake lovely family.
I was going to suggest Animal Crossing.
But you didn't, though. You didn't, though, did you?
I didn't. No, this is a great game. A lot of fun.
And then you move into Animal Crossing, and then you'll be addicted. The next thing you know, you'll be playing Skyrim, and laser dinosaurs will be popping all out the windows on you. You'll be excited. But start with Mario Kart.
Yeah, I think Mario Kart is a very good suggestion, especially because it's combo. You can all play together, which is really a lot of fun.
Yep. Yeah. And you can get in quick, in and out, play a game, takes 5 minutes. Boom.
All right. You got an assignment, Lisa Schmeiser.
All right.
Thank you Portal. Yes, Portal. It just came out for the Switch.
Yeah, Portal's a fun game. I loved Portal when it came out. Like, we used to have like little not parties, but like I guess we're the same thing as parties. Like, people would come over, we would just play it because it was just such a fun game. It was a great game.
It's a puzzle game. It's not violent. There is, as we mentioned, an evil robot that is kind of trying to keep you in there. You get a gun, a portal gun, which you can shoot two different kinds of holes, an entry hole and an exit hole. And it's basically a puzzle. How do you move around trying to get out? It's really, really, really fun.
Point A to point B.
Guys, I only just now realized the cake is a lie comes from
that's
Portal,
where the cake is a lie.
Oh my gosh. Because I was, Eddie Izzard is cake or death. And I was like, oh, maybe this is just an extension of cake or death.
You're in the Aperture Science Enrichment Center. And desperately, you have a companion cube, which is a lot of fun. This is actually a cerebral game that's fun to play and would be great on the Switch. In fact, now that you mention it, now that it's out on the Switch, I think I'm going to get Portal and Portal 2. Just came out. The Portal Companion Collection. Good recommendation. Good one. I like it. Lisa has a new job. No jitter. No jitter.
Editor-in-chief.
Yep. Nojitter.com. I am so happy for you. The conference is coming up next month. Find out more at nojitter, JITTER.com. Do you are you active on the Twitter? You want to give your Twitter handle?
I am active on Twitter at LSCHMEISER.
Great to see you. Anything else you want to plug? Plug something.
No, I was going to say, just be sure to check out the Enterprise Connect conference at enterpriseconnect.com. We're going to have both in-person and virtual events. So it's a pretty exciting hybrid conference, tackling everything from VR and AR in the workplace to identifying issues that may hinder meeting equity and how to address them. It's a really great look at communicating at a time when it has never been more important.
Awesome. Nojitter.com. Click the events tab. Thank you, Lisa. Georgia Dow, I honestly think your YouTube channel deserves to be known far and wide. What a creative. When you started, I thought, how is she going to have time to do this? And you have found so many interesting ways to do this. I love it that you're adding cosplay. Great job on this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything it's a lot of fun. Like, I'll just say it. I enjoy doing it. I like making the costumes. I like getting dressed up and being silly. sometimes I go too far. Yeah, okay, fine. Sometimes I go too far. But I really do enjoy it.
It's really good. It's really good. And in the interim, you're kind of learning about yourself, about psychotherapy. It's really a great idea. YouTube.com/GeorgiaDow. Of course, anxiety-videos.com. You still doing that? Do you practice still at all, or are you so busy?
I still have 3 days that I see all of my clients. So I do 3 days of that. And then the other days I do, the videos. So
Georgia@westmounttherapy.com. If you want advice, if you're in the Montreal area, she'd be a good person to contact. Thank you, Georgia.
Yeah. And I do them remotely. So,
oh, you do. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Well, now most people are doing it remote.
I think that's
anyways,
how we do it, so, isn't it? Yeah, come to think of it.
So it's no different. So I see people now all over the place.
Nice. That's really cool. As usual, we're going to wrap things up by saying Owen J.J. Stone, IQMZ.com, Raising a Ninja. You just interviewed Jeff Jarvis. He took over the interview on that one. You took over the interview with Aunt Pruitt. So I'm going to let Owen take over Twit as we say good night. Thank you all for being here. Owen, it's all you.
So I do have a bobblehead one, actually.
There you go.
From WandaVision. This is the only one I have the bobbles. So I found a bobble for you, Uncle Leo.
Is that Wanda? Who is that?
WandaVision from WandaVision.
Black and white Wanda. Monochrome Wanda.
Yes, that's how the show starts out.
Yeah.
My twit wife, Georgia Dow, does an excellent job recapping that show. If you want to feel like you know something about mindsets and psychology, you should go watch those episodes of hers. They're fantabulous on WandaVision.
Thank you.
But today It is a special day. First of all, I never promote myself in the show. If you watch the show, you know me. I don't care. If you go check out what I do, whatever. But DocTales is back. I did interview Jeff Jarvis. I just interviewed Jason Howe. I got Lisa Laporte on deck. Leo's done a show back in the day. Jordan's on there. A lot of new people coming on. I also do a sports show every week. It is fantabulous. It's called Gritty Nights. Get a drink. Come hang out. IQMZ Tech is now back where I rant and rave, and I do a poor man's Uncle Leo once a week talking about the tech news on my own show. So IQMZ.com, all the links are live. Go there and check it out. Now, after that, let me tell you something. We are coming out of a pandemic. And you and I have been alone for 2 years. World, let me tell you something. When you come out of this world, there are a lot of people that you need to not contact again. Okay. So as much as you missed family members and friends, and I told you to reach out to those people, love those people, you've also lost a lot of losers. Don't you pick them losers back up when this world starts opening up. Some people need to be left behind. Do good for yourself. Leave the baggage behind. Look for better things, better opportunities, better people. Know one thing. You cannot waste your time. You've already suffered 2 years of loss of time. Don't waste it out here with people that don't deserve or value you and your time. Be choosy. Be picky. Take care of yourself. Treat yourself out here in these streets. Now that the world's opening up, okay? Focus on you and better people around you. I'm your boy with JJ Stone, a.k.a. O'Doctor. And as they say, another twit is in the can.
Yeah. Amen, brother.